Everyone, it is 8:31 a.m. on March 31st, 2025, and I call the meeting of the Committee on Behavior Analysis to order. This meeting is video hosted using Zoom. The public and parties on this agenda have been properly noticed of this fact and have been supplied with meeting access instructions. For roll call, Ms. Malice, would you please call the roll?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Byra.
Present.
Dr. Davy.
Present.
Dr. Rates. No, Dr. Rates. Dr. Stenhoff.
Oh, Dr. Rates is here. I didn't hear her, but I saw her move her mouth. We
Okay.
can't hear you, Dr. Rates, even though you're not muted.
Okay, and Dr. Stenhoff.
Present.
Okay, and did Dr. Rates acknowledge that she's here?
Yeah, I can see her mouth moving. I think she's trying to work on audio here.
Can you hear me now?
Yay!
Yes.
Okay. I'm
Thanks,
here.
Dr.
Present.
Thanks, Dr. Rates. We do have a quorum. I'm sorry, Ms. Stinson is absent. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Malice. All right. At this time, I would like to thank my fellow members for coming and volunteering their time, not just to attend this meeting, but all the time that goes into reviewing the applications, that goes into reviewing the documentation that goes along with the complaints. And so thank you for your efforts to be here. And of course, thank you for board staff, because none of us would be sitting here if you guys were not part of this process. So thank you very much. Announcement regarding continuation credit. The Board of Psychological Examiners is approved by the BACB as an ACE continuing education provider. Attending a meeting of the Board's Committee on Behavior Analysts is eligible for continuing education credit for maintenance of BACB certification and for Arizona licensure renewal. To claim this credit, make note of the code words provided hourly throughout the meeting. To report the code words on board staff for purposes of earning continuing education credit, look for the link on the board's meeting page for this particular meeting. And Miss Malice, please keep me honest if I let an hour go by without asking for a code word. All right. On to agenda item number four. We would like to do an approval of minutes, both February 28th regular session minutes and February 28th executive session. So who would like to offer a motion for the February 28th draft minutes?
So moved.
Thank you, Dr. Senhoff. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Dr. Davy. So a motion is made by Dr. Senhoff. It has been seconded by Dr. Davy. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. And all in favor? Aye.
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 Great. Any opposed? All right. Motion carries. Thanks very much. All right. So we will start moving into agenda item number five, which is the discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding a recommendation to the board for complaint 25-12 against Joanna Burnett. Before we discuss the agenda item, I have important information to announce. Please note that a person or representative of a person who has filed or has subject of a complaint and is present today may make a brief statement up to 5 minutes to the committee when prompted by me. The committee may also have questions for the complainant or respondent after their statement. Only individuals directly involved in the complaint, which are the complainant and respondent, may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear for another party, it will make that request during the case review. For everyone in attendance today, please ensure your audio remains on mute. When prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant, respondent, and their legal representative may unmute themselves at that time. Please know that individuals in attendance who speak out without committee approval will be warned twice by the chair not to interrupt. If the interruption continues after the second warning, the individual will be removed from the Zoom meeting and not permitted to re-enter the meeting. Please only use initials for patients or children and the complainant. Be aware that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. For those in attendance, please be aware that the chair reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based upon parties present and requests to speak. Please note the committee may vote to go into executive session on any items on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38-43.03A2 to review confidential records, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is confidential by a state or federal law, and or ARS 38-431.03A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Jean Galvin. Before we proceed, committee members, are there any recusals or disclosures? Okay, seeing none, Dr. Davy, your lead on this matter, would you please supply a summary for the committee?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And so we have Ms. Burnett, who became a board certified or became a licensed behavior analyst in the spring of 2023. She worked for Charlie's House and was the sole BCBA at that agency during her tenure. On early June, June 7th, Ms. Burnett conducted an initial assessment for a new client that was going to be entering treatment at Charlie's House. Treatment was scheduled to begin on or around mid-July. However, later, or like July 19th-ish, Ms. Burnett submitted her resignation to the agency and cited various reasons for that, her reason to leave, and said that her last day of work at the agency was going to be August 30th, so giving some time in between her resignation and her departure. On July 26th, then on August 8th, the agency, on or around August 8th, the agency made the decision that it was going to have to close and cease operations. And the agency informed families that the last day of services, they would be closing the clinic on August 30th. However, at that time, Ms. Burnett had approximately 7 clients that were on her caseload. However, at that time, her resignation was sped up for reasons that I think we'll probe today. She ended up having her last day of work being August 19th versus the day she had initially requested on her resignation letter and the date that was conveyed to the parents. The parents in this case and the complainant assessed that the BCBA or the LBA abruptly terminated services without adequate notice and without a transition planned, that she abandoned the clients and several other children in the way that she left the agency. They were only informed that that services would be ended around that same time that Mrs. Burnett ended up leaving the agency, which was around August 19th, and that was via an email. Again, there seems to be some information that we'll need to probe into today around the departure of this LBA, as well as transition planning that went on, as well as kind of timeline of employment. And that, Madam Chair, is the summary of this complaint.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. Do any members of our committee have questions for Dr. Davey at this time? Okay. Seeing none, do we know if the complainants BF and JF are present, board staff?
Madam Chair, they did not respond to my notification with the meeting notice, so you can double check, but I don't see them here.
Okay. BF or JF, if you're present, if you could please unmute yourself and introduce yourself for the record using just your initials. Okay. We'll move on then. So let's see. I do see the respondent, Joanne Burnett. So could you please unmute your microphone, introduce yourself for the record, and then you're welcome to make a brief statement to the committee for up to 5 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Joanna Burnett. And I think first and foremost, I was hoping the parents would be here today. Just apologize for my sudden departure from Charlie's House back in August. At the time, I had kind of determined that that was the best course of action because there were a lot of other circumstances going on. I didn't really have a support system to be able to consult with regarding a lot of the things that were happening. And so I determined that removing myself and my license and everything from the organization was the best thing that I could do. Since then, you know, having some time to reflect, I think that I could have reached out to the board for maybe some more consultation on how to handle the situation. And I'm open to answering any questions to clarify information today.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Burnett. Committee members, do we have questions at the moment for Ms. Burnett?
Madam Chair, if you don't mind.
Go ahead, Dr. Davey.
Thank you for being here, Joanna, and thank you for your initial comments. I mean, first, I think I just want to kind of walk through a little bit around your departure. Obviously, you made the statement that, or you made the written statement that there was multiple reasons why you were looking to move on from this agency. Some had to do with just the organization and itself and the kind of supports that you were being provided. Others mentioned just maybe not the best work environment, and then also some issues just around your own well-being. In terms of the time when you wrote the letter and then when you actually left, if you could just kind of explain to the committee what accelerated that, what ultimately pushed you into a sooner departure date. You had given ample time through your written communication to the agency for them to work towards transitioning your cases to another BCBA, but then that timeline accelerated. Also, I'll note that in your written statement, you mentioned that there was perhaps a medical condition. In open session, I would request that you don't talk about your any medical condition. If you would like to speak to us about that, we will take you into executive session where your confidentiality can be protected.
Yes. So from the time that I wrote my letter of resignation, and I think, excuse me, I think the date that I had in my letter says that I submitted it on the 19th, which I believe is a Monday. I think I'd actually submitted it the Friday before, hoping that the people that I was submitting it to would have time to kind of ponder it, because I knew it was going to be a big blow, being the only BCBA with the organization. And every time that things like that would get brought up, you know, there's kind of a big reaction. So I wanted to allow some time for them to kind of ponder, and then that way we could meet on the 19th. So the 19th was the day when I actually sat down with the owner and the operations director to kind of talk about all of my reasons. And in that meeting, I was asked not to leave. I was told that my departure wasn't going to be possible. So saying that there was just going to be, there wasn't a way to make that happen. So I felt a lot of pressure and stress with that. But afterwards, there was some more conversation, and, you know, I expressed to them the reason I gave them the date that I did was in hopes that they could find somebody to come in and replace me, because I didn't want to leave all of the clients and the staff, you know, high and dry. And they were actively looking for somebody after that. And I was told by the operations director verbally that they had somebody who was going to be coming in and starting on the 16th. I don't know who that person was. So as far as I knew, there was somebody who was going to be coming August 16th, another BCBA. And then shortly after I was told that was when I received news that they had just decided to close the clinic instead. And after they made that decision, I was asked by the operations the owner, verbally not to come back into the clinic, and to just conduct all of my work remotely. I didn't feel comfortable with that because there were just a lot of things kind of that go on behind the scenes, and the operations director doesn't have a lot of or any background in ABA and in the field. And so she had a lot of influence that I don't think was appropriate for her to have there. And so I was really not comfortable with not being there, but was told that I couldn't come back in. So I then heard from a couple of the different staff that were working there that there was an individual, one of the RBTs was being given paid time off from the operations director to go and provide. She was getting PTO, and they knew that she was going to go and babysit for one of the clients. And I addressed that directly with the staff member and the inappropriateness of that relationship, and don't feel like it was handled in the best way possible. I was frustrated at the fact that the operations director was going to allow that, and was talking about it openly in front of other staff and saying that they needed to keep it from me. And then there was another staff member who came forward and said that she had she had reached out to the operations director regarding the quality of care that was being provided in the clinic. And they didn't clue me in on that conversation. And instead, the operations director just let this staff member go. So I was just very concerned with how a lot of things were taking place. I didn't know really what was going on there. I didn't feel that I had any say or proper support. I felt that the quality of care wasn't really there. And I didn't feel comfortable just kind of letting things carry out the rest of the time that I had said I was going to be there. So when all of that information came to light is when I made the decision to leave earlier than I had originally stated.
Thank you for that. So if we can kind of fast forward then to as you're getting ready to transition out of this position, I see that you create an email out to the parents letting them know that you're transitioning out. Talk to me about kind of how you're planning your exit from this organization, transition of what we believe is around 7 cases, and in this particular case, transition of the complainant, of that client in particular.
Yeah, so I provided resources for other ABA therapy. There weren't any other like clinics in Casa Grande. It's a very small rural town, and so there isn't a lot of other options. So I provided some resources that I had heard of that I felt were good resources and would be good options for them. But I did not reach out to those places and connect with them to fully coordinate that care. And now I look back and I see that that is a step that I could have taken to better coordinate for them.
I mean, the list is there for them to consider, you know, and again, I guess my question is at the particular point when you send this to them, do you know, like when you send that initial list in that email, and I'm looking for the date on that email, July 26th, mm-hmm. you provide a couple of different options for them in terms of places they could transition. At that particular point, are you still believing that the agency is going to stay intact and that there's going to be a BCBA, or by that point in July, have you made the decision or they made the decision that they're not going to be bringing someone on board?
I still was under the impression that they were looking for somebody to replace me, provided the referral in case they felt like they didn't, you know, want to stay with Charlie's house.
Yeah, so I'm looking at your email. The team is actively searching for my replacement, so there should be no interruption in your child's care. I will keep you updated with the process, and I'm available to answer any questions about the transition. However, you say it's my ethical obligation to inform you of other ABA providers, and you list out 3 and thank them in July, yes. Correct?
I had consulted a BCBA that I did some of my supervision under, and you know, wanted to make sure that when I sent out an email that I was providing sufficient information, and she had recommended providing those resources just in case there was anything that happened with my transition.
So just for my sake, so I have this down, the July 29th or the Friday before resignation letter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then at which point you're telling you inform them that your last day is going to be August 30th. In reality, and then August 8th, we've got the agency saying they're going to close and that they're going to be done. And then I believe you end up, what is your last day of employment? August 19th?
Yes.
Okay. So can we talk a little bit about the 8th through the 19th, like what, at this particular point, you know, the agency is closing. What are you doing to be able to wrap up these clients and particularly the complainants cases?
I I was trying to continue providing services, but like I said, it was very difficult to be able to be there, having been asked not to. I guess I didn't coordinate any further after I had sent that initial email with the referrals. I was still doing some parent training and opening it up for parents to be able to ask any questions or provide support if they needed it. I didn't really have any parents that were reaching out to me or like asking any questions about next steps. So I guess there was a part of me that had hoped that they had been, you know, reached out and found services somewhere else. And I didn't check in on that.
Okay. And so what about, I mean, knowing that the agency was done, right, and that they were going to have to transition, like that was pretty much a hard fact after August 8th, right? Were you working on like wrapping up the reports, transition plans, in particular for this client? Like you know, you had had, you know, couple of sessions with this individual. You'd done the initial. They've had a couple of days of treatment. How are you wrapping up this case to be able to give it to the next agency, or were you?
Yeah. So the platform that we used, I had the treatment plan and everything that was made available to the caregivers, and adding progress graphs to that to give it to them so that they could give it to the next person.
Did you ever develop an actual transition plan to be able to hand this off to another BCBA, whether it was when you thought that Charlie's house was going to remain intact, or when you realized that these individuals were going to have to seek care elsewhere?
No, outside of the transition plan that's included within the treatment plan, I didn't have anything.
And that transition plan is the one that was just created kind of as the initial treatment plan?
Yes.
I'm looking for the PDF page for the transition plan for the committee. If somebody beats me to it, let me know. Dun, 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 dun. Risk assessment, discharge criteria, treatment recommendations. Madam Chair, I don't have any further questions at this time. I'll defer to other committee members.
Okay. Other committee members, if you have questions, I promise to get to you in a minute. I have a couple questions of my own for Ms. Burnett. So, Ms. Burnett, I wanted to ask, you know, where did you complete your hours towards certification?
I completed them at Charlie's house.
And what happened to that BCBA, like who did your supervision?
So I started my hours under the clinical director at that time. She transitioned out and the company hired like a third party organization that had BCBAs that came in and oversaw treatment and were completing my supervision. But as soon as I had become licensed, then the company didn't continue with them.
Okay. So you did some supervision with a original person who was employed by Charlie House. Can you give me a breakdown of like what percentage of hours were done by her and then what percentage was done by this third party?
Sure. I think I did. Wow. Percentage wise, I'm just thinking months. I started with her in probably about 50%. I would say 50-50.
Okay. So then right after you passed your exam, got licensed, you just started without any other help. Okay. You mentioned that as you were drafting that resignation letter to families that you did reach out to your supervisor. I'm assuming it's the one who started supervision with you at Charlie's house. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Was that the only touch point? Did you say, hey, can you take a look at this email and give me some feedback? I guess in terms of figuring out how, I know you said internally there wasn't like the real HR department, no one else there really understood, you know, kind of the rules and regulations of behavior analysis here in our state. I guess in terms of that original mentor, like how many times did you reach out to her and kind of what was the nature of those touch points?
Yeah, so I definitely called her I would say 3 or 4 times to talk through what was going on. I let her know kind of the nature of what was in my resignation letter, but I didn't like send her a copy of it or anything like that. And that's when she was like, you know, if this is the route that you're going, like, just make sure that you're providing like these referrals and things. I think she also had a really difficult time when she left Charlie's house. So I think she was speaking from some experience there. But then beyond that, I didn't really reach out because I felt that she was a little bit nervous to speak to a whole lot as far as like what was going on. So with my like final resignation on the 19th, I didn't touch base with her about that.
Okay. In terms of other ethical concerns, did you ever reach out to the ethics hotline, either the one that's available nationally through ABBA International, or if you're an AV ABBA member, did you ever reach out to any of those resources to kind of help navigate you through the situation?
No, I went on the BACB a couple of times and did report some things that were more like for me with supervision deficiencies and things like that. There were some times when I went on and saw like, you know, it's difficult to report an organization and things like that. And so I didn't use those other resources though.
Okay. One other question before I hand it off to my committee members. When you found out that, hey, actually, we're going to just close the doors here. You know, I saw in your letter that you were employed, you know, part-time at another agency and then would be starting a new position. I guess, is there a reason you didn't offer families to go to one of those organizations where you were employed? I realize when Charlie House would stay open, you don't want to look like you're soliciting clients, but when, hey, sorry, Charlie's Horse is no longer going to be an option, I guess at any point did you think to say, as opposed to here's some, you know, and there here's some organizations I found on the internet, like, hey, I'm going to actually be working here. I'd have some opportunities to know about wait lists and caseloads and things like that. I guess walk me through if you considered that an option for your clients.
I did. I guess I didn't know if that would be considered like okay or not, because, you know, I had already worked with them in another organization. So I did avoid making that recommendation because I didn't know if it would be okay.
Okay. That's what I have for now. I'll leave it back open to my other committee members if they have additional questions. Okay. I see Dr. Senhoff is shaking his head. No. I see Dr. Rates is saying no. Dr. Davey.
I'm sure I do, but I think, I don't know if I have questions or more statements at this point.
I do have one more question before you start statements, if that's okay. Just going back to that timeline, Ms. Burnett, I know that Dr. Davey kind of walked us through Charlie House's timeline of when you resigned and when they decided to close their doors and things like that, and then you left. Can you just clarify when you started at the organization that you went to right after Charlie's Horse, not Charlie's Horse, Charlie's House?
Pardon. Yes. So my first initial assessment with them was like right around the time that I officially did like end with Charlie's House. So that August 19th date. But it was like, you know, that initial period, and then you're waiting 30 days to get anything going.
Okay. So just to confirm, like, I guess offer letter or like signed HR, like I'm in the system, I'm currently an employee. Can you just firm up the date for us? That would be helpful for me.
Yeah. I don't know the exact date. I'm sorry. Give me one second, please.
Sure. Take your time.
Madam Chair, if I may briefly just clarify, I had asked Ms. Burnett the same question, and in her email correspondence to me, she indicated that her first date was August 17th of 2024, which is 2 days prior to her resignation from Charlie's House. So she may wish to confirm that now, but that was the date she gave me. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson.
Thank you. I did just go back look at my calendar. It was the 17th.
Okay. Dr. Davey, on to your statements.
No
questions if they've arisen.
Yeah, I think one more question. Somewhere I read in your comment about a caseload of around 7. Does that sound accurate? When you were at Charlie House?
Yes.
And how many were you working full time, 40 hours a week? Were you working part time? I saw one of the comments in your letter was that you did not maybe have a full caseload or were not getting full hours. Am I understanding that correctly?
No, with Charlie's House, I was working pretty much full time. I worked mainly Monday through Friday from about 8 to 3. And then with my other position, I was working and, 3 days a week and in the afternoons or evenings.
Okay. So the 7 clients that you had at Charlie's House, they essentially had significant, like 20-hour a week programs, 30-hour a week programs that you were overseeing?
Yes, some of them were, more focused 10 hours, and some of them were more comprehensive at the 30.
Okay. And how many total RBTs did you have underneath you?
At least as many as I had clients. So there were 7 maybe RBTs, and then there were a couple of staff in training.
Thank you. That was my last question, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. Ms. Burnett, just one more question, because I just want to make sure I heard you correctly. When I asked if you looked into those other ethics resources, you said you didn't go on the BACB to report some things. It sounded like you said for yourself. So I just wanted to clarify, did you self-report to the BACB or you were looking up when others should be reporting?
I was looking up for myself. I think that's what I mean. But there were times where I was looking to self-report and then other times where I was looking to see like when others should be as well. And then trying to see what the options were as far as like organization things go.
Okay. In light of your investigation, did you wind up self-reporting to the BACB at some point?
I did. Mostly regarding like supervision deficits and things like that. Especially when my time came to a close, there were a couple of staff that hadn't met their requirements. And so I did report that.
Okay. At this time, I'd like to make a motion to meet an executive session to receive legal advice from our attorney, Ms. Galvin.
Second.
Motion has been seconded. Any further discussion? Okay, so all in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. The prompt on my screen. I'm sorry that I was muted. I do see my fellow committee members back here and board staff, so we can resume our questions. So, Ms. Burnett, I wanted to go back to your self-report to the BACB regarding supervision deficits, and if you can kind of walk me through what the issue was, what was your submission, and if you got a response from the BACB. What it was, if you could speak to that, please.
Yes. So there were, I think, 2 different staff that I had supervision deficits with. One of them was that month. It was actually the staff member who had been let go. So I wasn't able to meet that. So when I submitted to the board, for both of those staff members, I was told that there wasn't going to be anything further at the time, but to let the staff, the RBTs know that when, and if and when they reapplied, that they would just need to make a statement of that deficiency.
Okay. So sorry, you said the first staff you were deficient was, but I'm assuming it's someone you're talking about that went on the PTO and then wound up quitting to do the babysitting. Is that the same staff?
No, it was the one who had raised concerns about the quality of care.
Okay. So she was terminated or let go. So you couldn't get it all in. I guess what was the second staff, I guess, what was the reason for being deficient on that one?
Because of my departure and not being able to get all of those supervision hours in.
Okay, so for the month of final month of August?
Yes.
Okay. And is that the only self-report that you did to the BACB?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Other committee members have questions? Dr. Dave, you have the face that you have a question.
I can't unmute fast enough. I forget when we come back from small group, we are muted.
Automatically muted, yep.
I just wanted to clarify with the licensee that she also did do her obligation to inform the BACB of this complaint within the timeline. So she did self-report this. So that would be the other reporting that she made to the BACB on top of the supervision questions. Okay.
Do we have any other questions for Ms. Burnett at this time?
I think I have a question. And I guess it's going to help me understand probably where we go with this. So Ms. Burnett, I mean, let's be honest, like the concern here is probably around the transition period, at least for me. Like you have seven kids underneath your caseload. Granted, this, the one that brought the complaint had just begun treatment with you, and maybe did not have a ton of progress to report. But in looking at the transition plans that are part of the treatment plan, and all, it's page 43 of the PDF. It's also duplicated, I think, in the 90 somewhere. The transition plan that's included as part of the initial care plan is not really sufficient. Well, I shouldn't say is not sufficient to be able to move these clients on to another provider or for another BCBA to pick this up and fully understand kind of where they're at. And so, you know, again, with the newer client, maybe there's not a lot to report. Maybe the general transition plan statement's enough to say, hey, you know, we're just getting kicked off and I don't have much to say. But I am concerned about the other six clients and what information those parents were able to take with them to the next provider. And so is it your statement today that you did not write up plans for those families to take any information with them to the next provider, and that they most likely were just given their most recent reports from the agency as they departed?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And looking back on this, you know, now several months after the fact and us and you kind of having some time to reflect upon that, how does that sit with you? How would you do this differently today, knowing that this led to a complaint? And that this has caused some issues with regard to those transitions, not just for this one client, but perhaps for the other six you were serving.
Yeah, I've definitely gained a lot more insight as far as discharge and transition plans go. I've had some kiddos that I've worked with since then who have transitioned to other places, and the organizations will have a plan for transitioning that care. That wasn't something that I had been exposed to at the time when I was working at Charlie's house. So that was kind of a new experience for me. And I can see the benefit of that. I've also received clients who have that type of transition plan. So it doesn't sit well with me that I didn't provide that for the families that I had been caring for at Charlie's house. And if I could go back, I would provide a more sufficient discharge or transition plan explaining the transitions and where those kiddos were at the time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have any other questions. If you'd like me to move us into the next step, I'm happy to do that.
Yes, please. Yes. So if there's no further questions or discussions, we do need to adopt an emotion specific to the case 25-12. This is a recommendation to the board. So we will now begin deliberation. Please note that deliberation is time for committee members to deliberate the case among themselves without interruptions from complaints, licensees, or attorneys. So Dr. Davey, if you could then please begin that deliberation for us.
Yes. You know, fellow committee members, I don't think there's any question with regard to the lack of a transition plan for this particular client or the other clients. I think the licensee has come forward and said that that is the case, and that there were circumstances around the departure that may have sped things up, but that there really was not necessarily a plan in place to be able to create those transition plans, those documents to help support moving those kiddos along. And so I don't think that there's any question about that. The part that I'm wrestling is with right now is, obviously some continuing education makes sense. Some letter of concern of some sort makes sense. And just as a general statement, this is a very, newly minted BCBA, newly licensed LBA, that is coming from a bubble, if you will, of having a single supervisor at a single agency of how things are done. And by the way, I'm not making excuses. I'm making more of a statement of what I'm hearing, of a single way that things are done or should be done. And then when things get rough, not having a great network of individuals to speak to about this, and speaking to perhaps the past supervisor, maybe that would have been sufficient. Doesn't sound like in this case, perhaps it was sufficient. And so this, speaks to the need for our young professionals to create those networks and to be involved with individuals and not be in that bubble, and be able to outreach to individuals to get better advice on difficult situations. And I do believe that this for our young professionals as would be for any of us, having to make a decision to move on, being told that you can't because you're the only BCBA. Those feelings I'm sure are debilitating in many ways and may cloud your judgment about with regard to what the next steps are, how to move on. And so I do think that we need some additional help here for our licensee to get a better understanding of this and for her to hopefully talk to other BCBAs that are in her circle about what needs to go on to be able to be more informed about her ethical obligations to the clients she serves.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. I'll just add, for those who are listening on the call, more of like a public service announcement. It is really difficult if you are, a one woman or one man band, at your agency for sure, as Dr. Davey pointed out. I do encourage folks though to reach out to the resources that are available to you. The National Ethics Hotline, they are pretty quick to respond there. And also if you are an AZIABA member, which I encourage you to, do that if you're not already, they also have an ethics, hotline as well. I say hotline, it's email service, but being able to reach out to some peers in that way. And then also too, you can also look up on the BAC website, looking for individuals who are willing to do supervision and things like that might have been an option. So I realize it is a very challenging place to be in if you are the only person there to get some support. So I just wanted to kind of, again, give those on the call. If you're new, if you're in a place by yourself, like there are some choices and options to have. Other committee members, points of discussion, Dr. Senoff or Dr. Reitz? Okay, I'm going to take silence as a no. Okay. Dr. Davey, go ahead.
Yeah, I think just as part of the discussion, right, I think the conversation we need to have, right, is there's this line between whether or not this is going to be disciplinary or non-disciplinary. And I think the piece that I'm struggling with right now is, if I was going to move this, and I think the outcome's the same. It's going to be a letter of concern and some continuing ed, particularly around transition services and some other, probably a couple other ethics topics. But my question is, like, do we believe that the information provided today shows us that there was truly harm to this complainant? And if so, then we probably need to think about that as being disciplinary. If we don't have enough information to know if there was harm, and we just need to make sure that this is self-corrected so this does not occur in the future, then we could probably lean more towards a non-disciplinary. And so I think that's kind of where I'm at in terms of the conversation. I would, appreciate hearing from other committee members about the path. I have my own opinion, but I'll hold that for right this second.
Dr. Stenup, I see you've come off mute, so would you like to?
Yeah, Madam Chair, to Dr. Davies' point, the issue of the extent of harm, we don't have the evidence to support whether there was harm. I think given the circumstances of the organization dissolving, it's hard to say whether there was harm. And plus, then we will also have a confounding variable there of whether it was just due to the company dissolving or whether it was the result of the licensee's actions. And so I'd be more inclined to move away from that aspect and recommend perhaps having some CEUs to address transition services because the lack that we saw in there from in the materials we had and yours and Dr. Davies' discussions. So that'd be where I lean is to move away from that.
Thank you, Dr. Senhoff. Dr. Reitz?
Yeah, I tend to agree with Dr. Stenhoff. I think there's certainly some concern here in terms of how transition occurred. And I think some additional continuing education around discharge planning, transition planning, and documentation would be warranted.
Yeah.
So hearing offer a motion, Dr. Davey?
Yeah, I just would say I believe the same thing at this particular point. I do think it's important in terms of that public service announcement that that's not the way these things always go. I think that this is specific to this particular case and the facts that are in front of us. And so, yes, I believe that I will make the motion that we recommend to the Board of Psychology for a non-disciplinary letter of concern and a non-disciplinary order for completing continuing education. I think the continuing education can focus pretty much on Section 3 of the BACB's Code of Ethics, in particular, probably stretching, but consulting with other providers, 3.06, making sure that you're creating that network. I know that maybe red is like other outside, but it's really talking about consultation with other providers in the best interest of their clients. I think, I forget if there's a better one in there, Dr. Byra, please feel free to pick it out for kind of consulting with other BCBAs. Definitely, we need to make sure that the continuing ed focuses on transition planning, the appropriate transition to services, 316. But I think that overall, kind of making sure that we're in the ethics area of responsibility to clients and stakeholders, I'd like to see three courses in that, which I guess would be what 9 credits for that. And again, those credits would not count towards her renewal. These would be in addition to that. Dr. Byer, can you help me find the one on like working within?
I think it's, I'm looking for a collaboration of care. I think it is, 2.10, collaborating with colleagues. Behavior analysts collaborate with colleagues from their own and other professions in the best interest of clients and stakeholders. Behavior analysts address conflicts by compromising when possible and always prioritizing the best interest of the client. And behavior analysts document all action taken in these circumstances and their eventual outcome. So, I think the first line there, it's their own colleagues as well as others. And then I think that documentation piece is something we, typically heavily rely on of, how do we arrive at that decision? That piece. So
what was that number for board staff for the?
It's 2.10 from the ethics code.
Okay, so just to refine my motion, non-disciplinary letter of concern, non-disciplinary order of completing education. Completing education should focus around ethics, in particular 2.10, 3.15, and 3.16. And we're looking at 9 credits would be my recommendation that need to be completed within the next 60 days, and those would not be allowed to be used for her renewal.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, a motion has been made by Dr. Davey. It has been seconded by Dr. Stenhoff. Is there any discussion? Okay, go ahead, Dr. Bates.
I was just going to make a note and just share that I do appreciate that the licensee did self-report some things to the BACB, that she kept us apprised. I think it's important that, you know, we just make a note of that publicly. We appreciate that you did those things and that you were aware of your supervision requirements, and thank you for that and for being here.
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Waits. Okay, back to the motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. All right. So the motion carries. So for complaint number 25-12 regarding Joanna Burnett, it's going to be a, oh dear, now I'm going to repeat Dr. Davey, non-disciplinary letter of concern with 9 CEUs completed within the next 60 days across those 3 areas from the ethics code, and they cannot count towards licensure or certification renewal. Did I get all of that, Dr. Davey? Okay, board staff, do you have all the information you need for that?
Yes, Madam Chair, and the licensee and complainant will both be notified when the board does review this recommendation.
Perfect. Thank you, Dr. Michelson.
And Dr. Byer, I would just echo Dr. Reyes's sentiment that I know this is a scary process, Ms. Burnett, and I know having gone through this probably led to some sleepless nights, and I appreciate your willingness to come here and honestly speak to us about what happened and your experiences. And while this is not an educational forum, hopefully those listening in can take something from this about their own practice. And I would just encourage you to publicly talk to, you know, when you're meeting those young BCBAs or whatever agency you're at now, talk about this in a way that, you know, that as a learning opportunity for you. And be someone who can be an advocate to other families and to other BCBAs and LBAs in the state to learn from these things. And so I would just ask you to kind of turn the corner. We want you here practicing. We want you practicing at the highest level, and believe those CEUs will help you move forward with that. And hope to see you at a conference and not here or here listening and getting ethics credits. But thank you for being here, and thank you for your openness to the process.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Davey, for that. Before we move on to agenda item number 6, I would like to award, I was just going to call in Ms. Malice for our code word.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first code word is Bach, B-A-C-H, as in Sebastian Bach, but it's just Bach. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Malice. Before we go on to item number 6, now that we have our code word, I would like to afford my fellow committee members and board staff a quick comfort break. So if we could come back in 5 minutes, so 9:32, and we'll move on to agenda item number 6, if that works for everybody. Well, with that fun fact, we will move on to agenda item number 6. Us old farts will get right on it. Here we go. Agenda item 6 is discussions, consideration, and possible action regarding Rachel Vargas's self-report of the BACB action and initial application disclosure. Dr. Rates, will you please provide a summary of this matter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Vargas received her LBA in January of 2024. In March, she did inform the board of a recent notice of violation from the BACB that had been adjudicated. She wanted to self-report the matter to our board. And upon receiving that, the board did ask for additional information to be submitted, which Ms. Vargas did do. In review of the documentation, I do think we will have some questions for the licensee, specifically around some supervision practices. But that would be the conclusion of my review at this point.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Reeds. At this time, I make a motion for the committee to meet in executive session to receive legal advice. Do I have a second?
Second.
Is that Dr. Stenhoff? Okay. There's been a motion. It's been seconded. Is there any further discussion? Awesome. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Back now. So we will resume our public session here. Is Ms. Vargas present?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, if you could leave yourself unmuted and please introduce yourself for the record. And then you are able to make a brief statement to the committee, or I see that you're also with your attorney, Ms. Lauren Weinswig, and I apologize if that's mispronounced. You can go ahead and make your brief statement.
Sure, and I'll just introduce myself, and it's totally understandable. Nobody gets my name right. It's impossible. So my name is Lauren Weinswig, and I'm here representing Rachel today. Don't really have much of a statement to make, but I just wanted to say that we are here, obviously, as Dr. Rates mentioned, as a result of Rachel's self-report of the BACB determination and the corrective actions that she's implementing at this time. And I know the board has questions, or excuse me, the committee has questions for her. And, you know, I'm here to the extent I can be here and answer questions, but I think Rachel's really the one you want to hear from. So I'll mute myself for now.
Thank you. And I think Ms. Vargas, sorry, if you could just introduce yourself so your name's on record too.
Definitely. My name is Rachel Vargas. I'm just here to answer some questions for you guys.
Great. Thank you. All right. Committee members, do we have any questions for Ms. Vargas at this time? Go ahead, Dr. Reitz.
I think for me, it's just getting a little bit of clarity around sort of supervision that you were engaging in between October of 23 to January of 24. If you can share a little bit about what your role was at that position, what were you doing in terms of supervision of others?
Of RBTs in particular or just in general?
Yeah, RBTs.
I had no other RBTs from October I had no RBTs before I was licensed. My first RBT was the one that wasn't part of that determination. And that was not until February 1st, I believe, which was after I was licensed. Excuse me, I'm recovering from a cold.
Do you have additional questions, Ms. Reid? Dr. Reid, sorry.
I will, but I want to look at my notes. So if others have questions ready, feel free to jump in and I will come back.
Okay. I do. I know that you made the self-report, you know, to the board and they came up with some determinations here. One of them being a mentorship of 2 hours per month for 6 months. So I'd like to know at this point in time, have you secured your mentor as outlined by the BACB?
Yes, I have. Just as of, I can't recall the exact day, it was last week sometime that it was confirmed. And then we'll be starting up this week.
Okay. Thank you for that. Other committee members?
I just want to follow along with those lines. So you've got the, in terms of what the BACB has asked you to do, the mentorship, what about, have you started to work on the original project or is that going to be part of your mandatory mentorship project? And have you done, have you redone your 8-hour supervision training?
Excuse me. I believe the original project is going to be done with my mentor. That's what I've thought of and planned to do. My CEUs, I'm still searching for some CEUs in order to redo my supervision CEU.
And what's the timeline? Remind me on the.
They changed it. So when they approved my mentor, they changed it to be completed by 4/19. It was originally, I think, 4/11, but.
So you've got 19 days to knock out the 8 hours of supervision training?
Yeah.
To be in compliance. Okay. And then the permanent product is something that does not have a due date. It's part of the mentorship process, you believe?
That's my understanding.
I'm sorry, this is Jean Galvin, and I'm having a hard time, Ms. Vargas, hearing you. I don't know if it's just me or my sound. I'm a little bit more concerned about the record. I don't know if you could get closer to your microphone or...
I'll try.
And maybe is it just me, you guys?
My voice, I think, right now.
It's a little challenging for me too, Ms. Galvin.
Okay.
I'll speak a little louder. and I'll get a little closer.
Thank you. Dr. Davey, were you still
wondering? I'm done. Thank you.
Okay. So Ms. Vargas, just to go back, I think where Dr. Rates was, you know, kind of questioning on your application form where we're looking at your employment records, your start date with the employer was 10/17/2023 at Centria in Arizona. And it says position supervising VCBA. And the nature of the work is behavior analyst. So if you could maybe touch upon what were your roles and responsibilities. You said you weren't supervising RBTs, but I guess as a supervising VCBA, what were you doing?
Right. So that was the position title given to me. I had no control over it. my duties were to be suggesting either program modifications or maybe suggesting additional programs to be created in client cases. This was all overseen by my LBA that was supervising me. We made case consultations weekly, sometimes twice, three times. She overlapped me with clients. That was like, so I was, guess I was working all under her extended authority. Excuse me. But like I said before, I was not supervising any RBTs, as that's not allowed. So I was definitely following the rules for that.
Okay. I guess just to clarify, you know, acting as a behavior analyst without, you know, being supervised by a licensed, you know, BCBA, that's also not in compliance. So it's not just the RBT supervision that at least myself am concerned with. So you talked about overlaps and that you guys were working collaboratively. Do you have a supervision contract with the person who was supervising you? And then in terms of documentation, we have no, I mean, I guess walk me through what that looked like.
Yeah, definitely. I had my orientation week, I believe that first week of November. And then I signed a contract the first day that I met her, my LBA. And then I started tracking my hours on our tracker that we had with the company. Excuse me again. And we kept that tracker going all the way up until I was licensed. And that proves that, or it has evidence, I guess, that I was being provided minimum 5%, but most months were above that 5%.
So is the tracker just simple hours? We met from this time to this time, or there case notes?
There's descriptions as well of what was either discussed or what type of meeting it was. Yeah.
Okay. Other committee members? You look deep in thought, Brian.
No, I mean, I just think that, I mean, the question that we're asking, right, is was there an LBA supervising her while she was in this, you know, this position while she was unlicensed? It appears that that information is sufficient based on her recollection and what she's provided us. So I think that we can, I feel better about that now.
Same. Great. Other committee members have questions either surrounding that issue or surrounding the self-report to the BACB at this time. Okay. If there's no questions or discussion, we will need to adopt a motion for this matter, and this may consist of recommendation to the board. The committee will now begin their deliberation. Please note deliberations for the committee members to deliberate the matter among themselves without interruption. Dr. Rates, will you please begin the deliberation for us?
Yeah, I actually want to make a motion that we move to executive session for legal advice.
Second.
Okay, a motion has been made by Dr. Rates. It has been seconded by Dr. Stenhoff. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Okay, looks like we are all back. So Dr. Rates, if you would please begin our deliberation for us.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I think the discussion that we need to have today as a committee is whether or not we believe that a complaint should be open regarding practice of supervision, given the information that was shared today. And I would say we do have evidence here indicating that there was a lack of supervision for a period of time, and that we may need to consider opening a complaint to further investigate that.
Is there additional discussion?
I just would ask one question of clarification to Ms. Vargas, and that is where Greg was practicing as an RBT, the individual named in your BACB allegation?
He was practicing in Arizona.
Thank you. No further questions, but I'm sure.
Okay. Any other discussion around this? Dr. Stenhoff, go ahead.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think because there has been a violation that we, as Dr. Rates indicated, that we should move forward with a complaint just to investigate this further and have more of a decisive action, or at least on our side, a decisive recommendation if the board does approve a complaint to be open.
Agreed. With that said, do I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I, if that could be used as a motion, there you are. So,
okay. Dr. Stenhoff has made a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
The motion has been seconded. Any further discussion?
Just as further discussion, whenever this is scheduled, if the board does take this recommendation that to run this is scheduled, just to make sure that we're provided all information about the completion of the BACB's recommendations with regard to this matter.
Okay. So the motion has been made by Dr. Stenhoff. Sorry, Dr. David, did you also second it and then make a comment? Sorry, Dr. Rates made a second. Okay. So sorry, the motion is made by Dr. Stenhoff. It has been seconded by Dr. Rates. The motion that we would like to propose to the board is that we open a complaint to investigate this matter further, and per Dr. Davies' request, which I agree that we also get updates of her progress towards compliance from the BACB determinations. Did I get that right, Dr. Davey?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Board staff, did you get everything you needed from me for that? Okay. So thank you all who participated in that agenda item today. Parties will be notified by the board staff in the near future regarding procedural next steps. So please contact them if you have any questions regarding the committee's decision today. Perfect. Okay. Since I'm Madam Chair, I have been informed I am allowed to hijack the agenda. So I am going to take that power bestowed upon me. And I actually like to move to agenda item number 8, which is a discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recent updates from the Behavior Analyst Certification Board, the BACB. So, Ms. Pakanon, if you could please provide a summary of this matter for the committee. And then additionally, we would like to invite Dr. Rates and Dr. Davey to share any updates from last week, regulators luncheon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this item, we maintain it on the agenda in the event that the BACB issues regulator-specific information. They did not, so I don't have anything specific to share. And, you know, to your point, we definitely want to hear our regulators who were able to be at the APBA meeting to share what they learned. And I think we can do that both in the context of what the BACB facilitated, you know, in terms of the luncheon and whatever program was incorporated. But I think there can be a broader discussion too for, you know, as regulation was definitely a theme, at that meeting. I think that, you know, the members of this committee are probably going to have the most recent BACB newsletter on their minds. And so, you know, whether I'm not sure this agenda item is, could encompass that discussion today, but we may want to have some, decisions around, you know, putting that on the next meeting agenda. So I cede the floor to Drs. Rates and Davey now, unless you have questions for me.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Pakanon, for that. And I would like to address the newsletter. And I promise to be brief. And Dr. Davies, you're already unmuted, so I'll let you, you know, jump in right after that. And, you know, respectfully to everyone here, I'm happy to move this to a future agenda item. We can get to that when we get to that area in the agenda. But I purposely wanted to move this agenda item up because we have the applicants on this call. I know that after we get through item number 7, most people, you know, kick it, and I get it. But I think it's important when we have lots of folks on the call, especially those who are newly certified, probably coming into our state, to just kind of hear that. So, like I said, I just want to make a brief statement and I'll pass it on to everybody else. But if you haven't read the newsletter, it came out on the 25th, so a week ago now. So if you haven't had an opportunity, I encourage everyone to go to the BACB website and go ahead and have a read through. But, you know, in response to that, it is my understanding that the purpose of the Committee on Behavior and Analysis is that we are to be protecting the public by licensing and regulating behavior analysts, ensuring competent and ethical practice. And given our purpose, I am struggling to understand why the inclusion of a DEI CE requirement from the BACB would in some way jeopardize our licensure board's acceptance of certification. As a committee member, I believe our ethical obligation to provide competent services extends to all populations we serve, regardless of their diverse backgrounds, identity, or experiences. DEI education directly contributes to practitioners' ability to deliver culturally responsive and effective behavioral services across varied contexts. So the BACB's March 25th newsletter announcement regarding the elimination of the DEI continuing education requirements appears to contradict our field's commitment to evidence-based practice and that acknowledge contextual factors affecting behavior. By removing these requirements, we potentially limit practitioners' exposure to important considerations that impact ethical and effective service delivery. So I will get off my soapbox and I will pass it back over to other committee members if they have additional thoughts they want to share, either on the newsletter or if Dr. Davey and Dr. Rates, you'd like to talk to us about our luncheon. Floor is yours. And Dr. Davey, I see you unmuted, so I'll let you go.
Just with regard to the newsletter, I think the additional information that came out was limited. I do think that two things that came out from the BACB with regard to the discussion around that change was one, that there the threat of undermining certification was perceived as real from the occurrences of what had happened at the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation. And that the BACB's move was to protect certification as a whole, and that not see jurisdictions or states undermine that certification or, in fact, remove the certification's ability to be to lead to licensure. Currently, as it stands today, all 38 jurisdictions with licensure, their path to licensure is that of a BACB certification, hard stop. And they believe that threat to be real. And I'm reporting, I'm not opinionating on this. I'm just telling you what was shared. And so I think that that's important. I think the second piece that I heard was, I know that many will believe this is just nuance, but the terminology of cultural competence versus DEI. The BACB reported that in a survey of like professions, that the terminology that is used across those professions is not DEI, that it is in fact that cultural competence term. Again, that's what they reported as the terminology that encompassed those critical aspects that we believe to be a part of our responsiveness as licensed behavior analysts and BCBAs. And Dr. Reitz, I don't know if you heard other things, but I think those were the two pieces that came to light in that very short period of time.
Yeah, I think you captured that well.
Thank you, Dr. Davy. Before you move on to any other thoughts, I see that Ms. Pakenon does have her hand raised. I want her to have an opportunity. Go ahead, Ms. Pakenon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's a worthwhile exercise for me to do a review. Probably a 3-year review would be sufficient to look at the legislation that's been proposed in the state of Arizona that addresses this topic on some level. What I know to be the case is there was a statute enacted within the last 3, maybe 4 years that states it prohibits state agencies. So it would include the Board of Psychologist Examiners and all of its parts, precludes us from requiring any employee to complete training on this particular topic. So that's something that I give consideration to, of course. We may, as Jennifer and Heidi, elect to attend national regulator meetings. I look at the agenda very carefully, you know, to ascertain, is this, you know, does this comply with the statute? Does it not? Are we being required to go? Am I requiring Ms. Michelson to go? No, not the case. So I go through this analysis with this particular statute. But there are bills that have been moving through the legislature, which also address this topic. I may be remembering this wrong, but Governor Hobbs may have vetoed some of them, or some simply didn't, you know, progress to the governor's desk. So, but every session I've caught at least one or two of these bills. So I've never seen anything that comes close to what it is that you're describing in terms of, you know, this impacting certification or licensure. It seems to be pretty specific to what we as state agencies in an administrative sense are required or limited to do. But I'm raising this for your awareness, for the public's awareness, that I'm going to look again and see if I've missed anything.
Thank you, Ms. Pakenon. And it's not lost on me that there is tremendous pressure to remove anything and everything that has DEI listed anywhere. It's not lost on me, but I would just encourage those to, on their own, without being required, to continue to take ethics CEUs in those areas of cultural competency, that so we are providing the very best services to the clients that we are interacting with, from caregivers, stakeholders, and clients themselves. Do we want to put anything from your luncheon on further agenda or discuss today, Dr. Reitz, Dr. Davy?
I just think the other things I would just update you on are that there's going to be, the BACB is going to be, well, actually I want to go back to what we were just talking about. The other thing that was talked about at the conference were particularly individuals that were tied to, and I will not put Dr. Stenhoff on the spot, but particularly individuals that were tied to large institutions having to quickly scrub websites and program materials from the web with regard to particular keywords that are being targeted at this particular point. I think that was concerning to hear. hearing people using grants with regard to the titles of grants, particularly one special education teacher or special education professor I spoke to uses the word inclusion as it regards to bringing kids into mainstream programs that have developmental disabilities. That triggered a full review of a grant because of that term. I think there is just, it's important for us to stay informed about what's happening and to be educated around this and understand that there are definitely pressures being exerted on our field and by our academic wing of our field around particular terms at this point. I'll just say that. I don't know if Dr. Waits heard any more around that. And then if she cares to share a letter, and then I'll go on to just a couple of highlights from the conference.
Yeah, I would just echo that. I heard that from several individuals who had either had grants reviewed or who very quickly had to change grants that were about to be submitted as a result of some of the very specific words that were included.
Dr.
Sunhoff,
you're unmuted.
Yeah, to Dr. Rates and Davies' point, the funding has become quite concerning. I'm in a psychology department, but as you know, my colleagues in that department are starting to experience some of the outcomes of the administration's decisions. To Dr. Davies' point, the word inclusion has been in special education for decades now. So it's just getting highlighted. Hopefully that it'll be fixed or there'll be an understanding of exactly what that word means within that context because it is contextual. In that regard, some funding could be definitely or is being hampered by the language requirements. So.
Madam Chair, I'm happy to share a few things that came out of the regulator's lunch, just some updates if that's.
Yes, ma'am.
You'd like us to do that now?
Yep, take it away.
Okay, and Dr. Davy, please chime in if I miss anything. I think some of the more interesting things that I just made a note to share, there will be some webinars that are going to happen for regulators over the next year. Those will get posted, but it will be opportunities to come together and talk as regulators and a space for that. And I think a few others on specific topics. So I thought that was great to hear. Again, more opportunity for regulators across the country to connect and have a space to share what they're doing and ask questions and learn from one another. Additionally, there were some one-pagers with infographics shared about some of the statistics and some of the things that we're seeing across the country in terms of licensure. Those will be put on the website for regulators as well, and there will be more of those developed and shared out. So again, I think they're really working hard to find ways to communicate and to provide some access for what's happening across the country with different states and different boards. And then I think the last thing that was interesting for me was just learning that there were applications submitted to have, and Dr. Davy, please correct me if I get this incorrect, but essentially to have behavior analysts be a category through the Department of Labor, and that's not the case right now. And so that application has been submitted. It will take years before that would go into place, but it was interesting for me to learn that that was something that we are a very large field, but we are not a category. And so that has been submitted to the Department of Labor.
I would just add to that, that one of the reasons that we haven't done it is that the application process opens up every decade. And apparently, I think the BACB reported that they were monitoring for it 10 years ago and missed the 14-day window to make the application. So the second decade, they got it right. I think you summarized it well. I think the conference itself was great. Highly encourage those to attend APBA. Just a great variety of speakers. Particularly enjoyed one that was on gerontology and services for senior citizens. I thought that that presenter was energetic and really highlighting the need for us to take a look at how we brought autism into the fold as recognized and a fundable service, and look at doing that for our senior population that is growing rapidly. I think some other things that came out that I think are interesting for this board to consider as we move forward. One, I think that of the 38 states, 38 jurisdictions that now have licensure, 15 are under behavior analyst boards, 8 are under consolidated boards, and 7 still sit under psychology, much as ourselves. I think that the other thing I would just point out is that I didn't realize that this number was so high, but of the 38 jurisdictions with licensure, 25 of those now include a reciprocity provision for out-of-state licenses in their statutes or the rules or the regulations. And I think that that may be something in future legislation efforts that we may want to take a look at to be able to open up the doors for individuals that are looking to engage in behavior analytics services here. Slightly different than maybe universal recognition, where they're moving, but perhaps being able to obtain a second license, even if they're going to remain, say, in New Mexico or Nevada or Colorado. I guess Colorado doesn't count. They don't have licensure. So, and neither does New Mexico. Those were not good examples. So I'll pick other states. Let's go with Washington, Oregon, or Nevada. There we go. Those are all states that have licensure. Yes, those webinars are coming up, and I would expect, Heidi, that they're going to reach out to you in particular about the third one around substance abuse cases. I talked to the BACB about that, and they're interested in learning more about the RAMP program again that we have in place. And I believe that Massachusetts is now getting ready to start something similar to that. And so I think that Arizona will be well represented at those regulator meetings. And good conference.
Thank you, Dr. Davey, for the heads up. But of course, we're happy, you know, to be a source of information, being, I think, one of the more mature regulatory boards in the country, and having had having learned a lot through just, you know, sheer experience. So we'll be ready for that request.
All right. Anything else on agenda item number 8? All right. We will go back to number 7, which is the discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendation to the board pertaining to approval of behavior analyst applicants. Just as some public service announcements related to applications, please make sure that tell your friends, update your email and your address if you move, if you get a new email address. I know a lot of folks we are seeing are using their employer address as a way of doing applications. And then if you quit, leave, get fired, you may be locked out of that email account and then not be able to access that. So I would recommend you use your personal email, and please make sure you're updating that if it changes. Also, please check that the verification forms for those inverse questions. So there's 2 at the very end. All of them should usually say yes, but the last 2, number 11 and 12, those are actually inverse. So was the supervisor conducting supervised work experience a relative, a subordinate, or employee? That should be a no, but we see a lot of them come in as a yes because all the ones before it are a yes. And lastly, were any of the modifications made to the training program due to the pandemic that were not captured above? If so, provide that written explanation. And then again, folks are saying yes to that question, I think, because all the other ones are yes. So before you upload it into your application file, like, please just check those. If your supervisor has checked that an error, please ask them to make that adjustment, because oftentimes the week of applications, we are having to ask Ms. Malice to, can you reach out to this applicant because there's a problem here? Go ahead, Ms. Pakanon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I too have an update. The modifications that the committee directed be made to the portal, to the application portal,
Ms. Malice and I validated all of those changes in the QA sandbox testing environment on Friday. And we found them to be working as expected. So we've notified the development team that as soon as they can deploy those changes to the production, to the live site, that, you know, we would love to see them there. The development team is largely based in Croatia, so there's always this time lag that we have to maneuver, and they're very strategic about when they do system deployments. But all this to say that relatively soon, we're going to see those enhancements that you need to see specific to the employment page of the application. You will continue, of course, to see all previously submitted applications that don't reflect this change, but on a certain date in from in April, from that point forward, then those applications are going to be much easier for you to review.
Thank you for the update, Ms. Pekkanen. And then lastly, making sure that when you are filling out the application, it is you who are filling them out and not allowing a second party to do that on your behalf. You're attesting to the accuracy of that information and things on that regard. So with that one, I am going to hijack the agenda again and ask to start with 7C, which is requesting approval for telehealth registration. And Dr. Stenhoff, you are the lead on that case.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Byra. This is an application that comes from us from Reagan Gould. She is requesting approval for telehealth registration. Upon review her application, I wanted to note some things that were provided, more also just for information for the public, but also just some of the issues that I came across while I was doing this. according to state statute, section 36-3606A1D, the applicant needs to provide evidence of professional liability insurance, which in fact Ms. Gould did. Also, 36-3606A1E, there was a designation of a duly appointed statutory agent for service of process in the state. And board staff, correct me if I'm wrong, but I saw evidence in there of a self-query report that indicates that the healthcare provided the regulatory board or agency registering the health provider, that she did use a national practitioner database to verify the information that was submitted related to the paragraph. So I see that in there. So all of those were provided. Where I did note the deficiencies, according to ARS 36-3606A1B, needs to be proof of the healthcare provider's professional licensure, including all United States jurisdictions in which the provider is licensed and the licensing numbers. However, Ms. Gould did not provide any of that information. In fact, I think because she is not a licensed behavior analyst, divining the information in the packet, application packet, it seems that she might be practicing or living in another state. I'll come to that later on, but at this time, due to the state statute, there is a requirement that there is a professional licensure to be part of the application, which is not existing. The other indication I just alluded to in 36-3606A1B, there's an indication there too that the provider should reside in another state. The address that Ms. Gould provided us was a Glendale address. Dr. Byra indicated that in her statements earlier about caring for the application, not using your agency's address is your address, but the application for telehealth, it appears that Ms. Gould is residing in Glendale. Well, her BCBA certification indicates that possibly lives in California. So there's a deficit is there as well. The other, this is also related to a statement that the Madam Chair made as well, is that it appears that the email address provided was related to another individual, not her own. And I'm going to kind of cross-check that, but it appears it'd be a Mr. Joseph Martin. And so it appears also is that she's acquiesced the application process to somebody else instead of herself. So some notable things. It primarily is there is a deficit in a primary requirement that the individual is licensed in another state according to state statute, and living in another state. Now that might be a confusion through the application materials, but there is a deficit or deficiency in the application requirements, and that's primarily related to the professional or the lack of professional licensure in another state. So at this point, I recommend that to the board that they deny this application due to the deficits. Ms. Gould, if you are here and it looks like you are, you know, if you've got any statements to help clarify what I've said, but feel free to unmute yourself and speak if you'd like.
Hi, I'm Ms. Gould. Thank you so much for that. And that is correct. I accidentally put the incorrect information there. But I did not realize that it was supposed to be my personal information, as it did not state that directly on the application. But I am definitely willing to go ahead and update any information that needs to be updated and make it as accurate as needed.
Okay. And then just to the point that I made, and I think is probably the primary deficiency, is you are not licensed anywhere else. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I'm not licensed anywhere else.
Okay. So given that, unfortunately, you know, the part of the duty of this committee and the Board of Psychological Examiners is to follow the state statutes that have been put in place by state legislation. So, you know, according to this, and what the law reads is that there's, you would be ineligible for telehealth, practices, because of your lack of licensure in another state. And I understand you're practicing in, well, clarify that too. In what state are you residing?
So I'm currently living in California, and then okay. To reapply and get the Arizona application and license, and then do the telehealth.
Okay. All right. Okay. Great. So at this time, I have to recommend that this application be denied. However, you know, I know we're legal counsel is not here, but would there be an option, board staff, for her to withdraw her application in order that she might submit her application for licensure through the regular channels?
Go ahead, Ms. Packerman.
Thank you. Dr. Stenhoff, I can address your question. So, and I'm going to take it a step backward a little bit, which I hope you don't mind. The policies of this agency are that if someone presents an application to us in the administrative review window period of time, and they request that it be withdrawn, we will review that application to determine, is there anything about this application that is of a concern where staff would prefer to forward the application, and the review bodies, the committees and the board, make that determination about whether withdrawal is appropriate. So I'm very judicious when withdrawal requests come to me. Clearly, this is not one of those instances. For all the reasons that you raise, the fact that the applicant supplied an Arizona address, the fact that she didn't use her own email address to supply, to correspond with us, to receive information about this license. That's why that is critical and essential. This board should never, will never communicate with anyone under its authority through a third party, period. There were also the statutory authority address was shared with the Arizona address. It's all the same. So that raised questions, red flags, if you will. The statement that was submitted that having BCBA certification enables a BCBA to authorizes them to practice in any state was, of course, you know, troubling to see, to say the least. So it's really everything that Dr. Stenhoff covered that compelled us to determine this needs committee and then board review. So all that being said, you know, withdrawal is within this, a recommendation for withdrawal is still within this committee's discretion, but denial is also entirely an outcome. She clearly doesn't qualify for this authorization. She stated to me that she intended to use it for providing supervision into the state of Arizona. The telehealth registry authorization is quite clear that it's for direct client services only. Supervision is not permitted under this authorization. So I raised that awareness with her when we had this conversation. So really, I think it is incumbent on the committee today to decide whether a recommendation for withdrawal is appropriate or whether, as Dr. Stenhoff has said, forwarding a recommendation to the board for denial is appropriate. Does that help you, Dr. Stenhoff, and everyone?
It does. It does. Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Pachon.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Please do.
One other follow-up question. Have you provided any supervision services in the state of Arizona?
No, I have not.
Okay.
Chair, I have a couple questions.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Ms. Gould, the organization, so I read through the materials, third party trying to credential you, it looks like in the state, so some other, who are you going to work for in the state of Arizona? Who is going to employ you?
Genesis.
Genesis what?
Genesis Behavior Center.
Okay. And there, and the address you used, correct, is their singular location in the state of Arizona at this point?
Yeah, so the location that I provided you is the franchise location, and that's, I'm employed by Genesis, but I'm going to be assisting at the franchise.
So do you work for Genesis in California at one of their other locations currently?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
And how long have you worked for Genesis?
Since January 2025.
Okay. And so as part of their expansion into the state of Arizona, did they come request that some of their BCBAs look at becoming available to be able to provide services in Arizona?
Yes.
Okay. And once you responded in the affirmative that you were answered, what was the next step that happened after you said you were interested in that?
Can you restate that last question?
If you answered in the affirmative that, like, yes, hey, I'd be willing to help out in Arizona, what were the next steps by the agency?
Well, the next step would be to complete the required documents for Arizona. So starting with the telehealth application. Again, I misread the website. My eyes were searching for telehealth. I was not searching for the license. So it was an honest mistake on my end. And I'm more than happy to complete the license that's required for Arizona and then redo the telehealth application. And also the information that was provided on that Arizona telehealth application, I did put the Arizona information because I didn't realize that it was supposed to be my personal information. But I can definitely provide you guys with that, with my personal information as well.
That's understandable. What I'm trying to get to is how many other people were put in the same position by your organization. Like, I'm wondering, are there other applications sitting here that we're going to be seeing coming through in the weeks where The organization has asked, and again, I don't know who sent you the information or who provided you the information to fill out. If it's the credentialing company that reached out on your behalf, to which Ms. Pakenham alluded to, that we would not be corresponding with, we will never correspond with a third party, as she clearly stated. I'm interested to know who gave you the wrong information about the telehealth registration versus a licensure path. And then secondly, well, I'll let you respond to that.
So to answer your first question, I am the only one coming in from the company so far for Arizona, so you will not be receiving other applications at this current time. And then the person who gave me the incorrect information, we work with a company called Ideal Services. So the person specifically who gave me the incorrect information was working from that company.
Well, we have zero jurisdiction over the agency or your billing or your credentialing services, but I would highly recommend that they are informed of what has transpired over the last month and that they adjust so that they are not putting other BCBAs at risk. Secondly, I want to comment on something you just said, that you're going to go through licensure and then go through the telehealth registration. Did it? But I want to make sure it registered with you with what Executive Director Pakenham just said, that supervision is clearly not part of our telehealth registration list of services, right? I mean, so you've got to come to some understanding about what services you're actually going to be able to provide in this case.
In California, that's what we call it. So it's direct services, a behavior analytic work that I would be providing with the client.
Madam Chair, maybe we want to clarify. It seems that I don't believe Ms. Gould is represented by an attorney, but it appears there's someone who's, you know, maybe helping her answer the committee's questions. I think we need some clarification on that.
Agreed. So, Ms. Gould, can you tell us who's kind of coaching you in the room right now?
Well, it was my understanding as well that this counts as a CEU, so I am allowed to have other people present if needed.
Yeah, that's fine. I think we just would like some clarity as who's helping you answer the questions.
Am I required to answer that?
Is there a reason you'd not like to?
Well, I don't have anybody here representing me for legal purposes, so I'm not comfortable providing any additional information for that.
Okay, I heard, I guess. I don't know. Board staff, fellow committee members.
I think the question just is like, is it just one of your colleagues in the room helping you be moral support, or is it an actual attorney?
Moral support, yeah. Sorry, I'm a new BCBA, so I'm a bit nervous on this stuff, but it's just moral support for me.
Okay. I do want to address as well, like, as I realize that some of the terminology in our statutes is, you know, maybe a bit tricky to read. But I do think that we need to take ownership when we're filling out those applications, that if we have questions, we ask, as opposed to just continuing on and submitting it without asking for clarification. So I think we just need to take some accountability as applicants coming into the space, that we are the ones reviewing it, understanding it, and filling it out, asking questions of board staff before submitting. But additional thoughts, questions, discussion from other committee members?
Yeah, I just want to be clear about this supervision piece. So I understand your answer of what you refer to as supervision, but I want to be super clear that if you do not have a license and you're in the telehealth service realm, you cannot provide supervision to someone who is trying to obtain their license in the state of Arizona. That will not count. That is not allowable. And so anytime that you need to be very clear with these individuals about what it is you're doing. Otherwise, you know, a year from now, when you have somebody coming forward for licensure that you've been overseeing from California, we are going to, and if you had just gotten this telehealth registry documentation, we would have denied all the hours for that applicant, and we would have opened up a complaint against you for practicing in the state without a license. And so We just need to be very clear that is understood by your credentialing body, your company, and others on this call, that is the very real aspect of that telehealth services. And that is what Ms. Pacino was speaking to when she said that supervision piece there cannot be occurring.
Yes, that makes sense. Thank you for the clarification.
Madam Chair, I've got another question just to clarify.
Go ahead. A
response from Dr. Davey. So Ms. Gould, you indicated that you're going to be providing supervision. And what you described was supervision of clients. Could you clarify, are you providing supervision to future BCBAs or those working on their supervision hours, or are you referring to supervision to clients and the oversight of that?
Yes. So I am not providing supervision to people who are looking to get their BCBA or any of those certifications. I am specifically providing supervision to the client directly.
All right, thank you.
And Dr. Davey, if you touched on this, I apologize, but I heard you make the note and clarification that you can't be supervising any candidates and have those hours count if you're not licensed in the state. But you said you're a newly minted BCBA, so if you're less than a year, then if you do start providing supervision, regardless of the state you're in, you'd need someone also monitoring you and meeting that monthly. That person would also need to be supervised in the state that the person acquiring those hours are. So if you did start, and let's say you get your license and you start supervision of someone in Arizona who would like to accrue hours, their behavior analytic trainee, towards their certification, whoever your supervisor would be would also need to be licensed in the state of Arizona. So I want to make sure that piece is also clear.
Thank you. Yes, that is clear.
Okay. Other points of discussion before we move in, or other questions before we move into, I guess, deliberation on this? Alrighty. Dr. Stenhoff, since you were lead for this, I guess, can you lead us down a path here towards a motion?
Yeah. I think there were some important deficiencies here, and I think there's also a lack of clarity in what type of supervision was being conducted or what would be conducted. I also am not very the applicant did not it appears complete a lot of that application or some of the application on her own, and that it was done by somebody else. And then just the point of being licensed in their state and just the oversight of that. And then the lack of understanding of what the statute says and what it means. And the transfer of using the BCBA and the viewpoint that the BCBA is an omnibus certification that allows you to practice in any state was concerning to me. And so I think to put a motion out there, I would say that I'm going to recommend that it move forward to the board for denial for the application. And that's for those reasons.
Okay, there has been a motion made by Dr. Stenhoff. Do we have a second?
A second.
Okay, the motion is made by Dr. Stenhoff. It has been seconded by Dr. Davey that this application be recommended to the board for denial. Any further discussion? Okay, all those who agree, aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, the motion carries. Okay. So with that, I think, Ms. Malice, could you give us a code word?
Yes, Madam Chair. The next code word is Eastwood. Eastwood, as in Clint Eastwood.
Very good. Can't wait to hear the theme revealed at the end. Ms. Malice always has something very exciting going on. All right, before we move on to 7A, which is the remainder of the applications here, I would like to afford a comfort break to my fellow committee members. Do you want a 5-minute or a 10-minute, you know, poll the audience here? You know, one or two, help me vote. Okay, Paige is the only one who voted, so 5 minutes, according to Dr. Reitz. Be back in 5 minutes. So I know the majority of you guys are all here for item number 7. So thank you for patiently waiting. We are going to move on to the discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendation of the board for behavior analysts, section A. So behavior analysts applications for licensure. So Dr. Davey, you're up first with applicants 1 through 5. So if you could do those reviews, that would be most appreciated. Yes,
should we kick off with some recusals?
Oh, sorry.
Disclosures.
Yes, sorry. I didn't think there were any for any today, but my apologies. So please, if there are, please go ahead.
Madam Chair, yeah. I need to disclose for applicant number 6, Larson Angus, and applicant number 13, Elise Evans, that I was their professor while they were working on their master's in their program.
Okay. Do you feel like you can remain unbiased? Sorry, just so were you cool? Okay.
No. Yeah, I left that statement off. Yes, I do. Thank you.
Okay. As to make sure that you're okay to vote. So let me make
a motion. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else? Dr. Reitz or Dr. Davey?
Yep. I'm going to list off some. So okay. I'd note that applicants 7A, 3, 8, 9, 16, 18, 24, 26 indicated on their application they currently or were previously employed or received supervision at an organization where I am employed. However, given my position and responsibilities, I do not know any of these individuals personally, nor was I involved in any of their clinical duties or practice. Therefore, I believe I can be impartial in reviewing these applications.
Perfect. All right. And Dr. Reitz, none for you? All righty. And none for myself. So Dr. Davey, if you could go back to 1 through 5, that would be lovely.
Yes. Give me 1 second. I just, for some reason, all my screens decided to go away and just show me the earth. So that was exciting. So I had already been corresponding with board staff on a couple of applications. And so for application 7-1A, Ms. Malice, for Matthew Hughes, as long as you're able to put the dates that were typed on top of each other, I believe that's just a typo and an administrative issue that you can fix. And so I'm fine with that. Same for Alexandra Rariri, if you could update the BACB screenshot that you took. It looked like we got like some gremlins in the BAC system that had this individual's the applicant, the date of their BACB certificate being issued is completely erroneous on the first one, but the second one, Ms. C. Pold, was correct. She said she has now put that in the file. And so with those two, those minor fixes, and then 7A3, the review of those files, including the applicant's education, supervised experience, examination, performance, and decorations, I find them to be both administratively and substantively complete. For 7-4, Jessica Simpson, I will just note for the committee, and I asked Ms. Simpson to attend. I'm not sure if she's here today, but in case the committee had any questions, I personally do not. She received the DUI back in 2006. She worked through the entire process, and in fact, in 2018, completed all the paperwork, and judge saw fit to set aside the 2006 DUI from her record. Believe that she is more than made amends for that in terms of her behavior for over the last almost close to now 18 years. So if committee members have any questions, I did ask Ms. Simpson to be here. As I stated, I do not have any questions for her. Okay, then I would like to see her application move forward as well to the board. And then finally, Paula, or for number 7A5, Paula, I'm going to mess this up, but we're going to go with it. Madge and Noggin, we're just going to go with it. Sorry, Paula. I apologize out loud. On this case, concerning around the second supervisor that after multiple attempts just decided it has failed to respond back to the applicant. And I would like to see that we forward this individual's name, Melody Ray, to the BACB for failure to comply with another jurisdiction's request for information. On top of the fact, the more important fact is they were unresponsive to someone they supervised, which is a big no-no. And so those are my five, Madam Chair.
Thank you. With that, we'll move on to 7A6 through 11, where Dr. Raitz is the lead. So please take away Dr. Raitz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am pleased to say that for all of my applicants, I will go through their names quickly. Larson Angus, Bonnie Fortier, Emily Gunderson, Kelsey, I'm sorry, I'm going to get this wrong. Kunich, I apologize. Abby Palmer and Simon Aspinall. My review of the file, including the applicant's education, supervised experience, examination performance, and declarations, find them all to be both administratively and substantively complete. So I would recommend we move them forward. And that might be a record.
I was going to say, I think that you get 10 points. You and Dr. Stenhoff. Oh, no, Dr. Stenhoff didn't get his other 10 points. So you are in the lead, Dr. Ray.
Dr. Stenhoff hasn't used the word yet. And so he is still at 0 points.
I, in his defense, I did hear him use the word.
Oh, darn it. Well,
Madam Chair, thank you, Ms. Pakanon, for defending my use of acquiesce.
All right, tied. Officially tied then. All right. If you guys were here at the very beginning of the meeting, you will know that Ms. Denton was unable to join us. So I, even though the agenda does not reflect it, I am lead on those applications. So fear not if you're here thinking, oh dear, yours is not reviewed. I did spend quite some time last night reviewing all of Ms. Denton's as well. So I will be covering 7A12 through 22. I unfortunately am not going to win any points, Dr. Raitz. I do not have a complete clean list, but I do have quite a few. So for my clean list, applicant number 13, Elise Evans, number 16, Nicole Sorensen, number 19, Esmeralda Galvan, number 20, Gina Simmons, 21, Alicia Olivas. Sorry, guys, me and phonics did not become friends in school. My review of these applicants, including the applicant's education, supervised experience, examination performance, and declaration, I find them to be both administrative and substantively complete. I recommend they move to the board. I also found number 12, Jasmine West. I also would like to move this towards the board for approval. I just wanted to note that she did have a minor in possession charge 20 years ago and no issues since. So I just want to disclose that because this is, you know, public meeting, but I don't have any concerns moving that forward since there's no other infractions for 20 years. Okay. So I'd also like to add applicant number 12, Jasmine West, to that list. But then I do unfortunately have some to go over that do have some issue. So number 14, Marissa Beck. We have that supervision was completed by a David Kelton, but he was not licensed in the state of Arizona until the final month of their supervision. I'm not sure if Marissa is on the call or not, but I'm going to call on my fellow committee members for two issues. One, that, you know, our statute states that they do need to be completed by someone who is licensed here. But then I'm also concerned that David Kelton had practiced in the state of Arizona without a license.
I'm here on the call.
Okay. Thanks, Marissa. I don't need anything from you just yet, but committee members, I guess I'll call on you for prior, you know, kind of what has happened before in instances like this. It's my understanding that those hours wouldn't count towards licensure here.
Can I interject? Because I did have another supervisor in the beginning who was licensed in the state of Arizona. David didn't begin supervision until after he became licensed. So I have Carissa Glenn, who is a licensed LBA in the state of Arizona. She did the about 50% of my initial hours.
Okay.
And then David did the second half.
Okay. I'm pulling up your application here. Let's see. I have David listed from December 1st until May. For the time there for, yes, about half, 746 hours, but that his license wasn't until May. And so from December until May, I mean, I obviously don't know how many of those 700 hours were in that last few weeks of May, but certainly it couldn't be 700 of them.
Is it okay if I talk? I don't want to intercede.
Yeah, go ahead.
So for Carissa, I began my hours with her in May. It wasn't until December. So the fieldwork verification that I submitted the initial month of May 2023, I began with Carissa. We completed 89.99 hours under Carissa, who is a licensed LBA in the state of Arizona. She did my supervision May, June, July, August, September, October, November. And then I began supervision with David Kelton after he got his LBA beginning in December of 2023.
That's, I think, where the error is right there, because
okay, that's what I'm trying to look at. Maybe I misread his dates here, but his license was the 24th, right, of 2024. It was May 3rd, 2024. That's when he became licensed in Arizona, according to our licensing board.
Committee, clarify, he submitted his license in December of 2023, but as you indicated, did not become licensed until 5 months later in May of 2024. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. So I'm sorry, Marissa. I do see the piece that was done by Carissa beginning in May 5th. I'm looking at your committee members. I'm on page 13 of her application. I do see the part with Carissa Glenn from May 5th, 2023 to November 30th, 2023 for 754.99 hours. So I do see that component, but right before that is David's signed form, and he said that he started December 1st, 2023 to May 27th of 2024, and he was only licensed, you know, for the last, you know, 24 days or something like that of your supervision. So right. 746 of those hours. So
I'm sorry, I think I must have entered the wrong information at that point, because he was my clinical director. Like, I know that he became licensed earlier than that.
No, Ms. Michelson works for board staff. So sorry, maybe not everyone knows who Ms. Michelson is, but Ms. Michelson, and actually I don't want to botch your official title, Ms. Michelson, but you can type into our website as well. If you go to the psych board, you can look up a licensee's by name, and you can see when they were first certified or first licensed and when their application is like set or their license is set to renew. You can see if there's any disciplinary actions. And so while Ms. Michelson just verbally confirmed that, I can also see the screenshot from the board website that he was not licensed, unfortunately, until May of 2024. So I'm very sorry if he misled you in that area. That's disappointing if that's the case, but he maybe submitted his license, but that is not the same as having a license. There's not a provision in our statutes that allows you to practice while you're awaiting a decision or anything like that. You have to, you're either licensed or you're not. There's not a promote, like a waiting period or things like that.
Okay. Could you provide me the website that I would have to go on to verify that? Because everything that I know in my clinic is that he was done. Like I was present when he submitted his documentation and he did his
right.
Work.
So there is a bit of a wait time. So when you submit your application, just like I'm sure you're experiencing, you didn't like submit it this morning, right? You submitted it probably, I think we're looking at usually like a 90-day wait time. And so from the time that you submit until you actually come and it gets approved first by the committee and then by the board, there's several months that occur. So if you go to the AZ Psych Board website and go under directory, there's a button to push licensee directory and you can look them up by last name. So I'm sorry that this is the spot that we're in. Your options moving forward, and committee members will ask you to chime in on this. If you can get, you know, someone else to attest that if you're currently working in a position where you are getting supervision by someone who is licensed, and they can attest to those hours, that deficit, you know, like somewhere around the 750 mark, then we can consider those towards your application. But as it stands right now, we won't be able to move you forward.
So you're saying that David did not actually become licensed until May of 2024?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And so that's half my hours. So essentially, I would have to go to verify that. I would have to go to azpsychboard.com.
You need to, whoever it's been you've been working with since you took your exam, you would need to talk with someone who, if they have been supervising you, if they would attest to, you know, you doing those additional at least 750 hours. They have to be licensed, of course. That would need to happen to be able to be considered for licensure.
Okay.
Board staff or committee. Sorry, Marissa, I'm just going to ask some of my colleagues if I've missed anything or if there's additional steps that she would need to take. Ms. Pack, and I see you're unmuted, so.
Oh, yes. I just thought I would take it. This seems like a segue it's appropriate for me to talk about. So what the substantive review is clearly identifying is an application deficiency, and that's pretty much been quantified. So the way this process works, we will issue a formal letter. We acronym it as a FAIR, formal additional information request. So you receive that, you know, several days after the meeting. And in that letter, it articulates exactly what your application deficiency consists of and exactly what you would need to supply in order for your application to come back to the committee for consideration. We will need, because of the quantity of the hours, of the deficient hours, we will need to, I'm sure, talk about the time frame that the board's administrative rule, R-426-417, affords you in terms of, you know, how many days you have to complete this deficiency for your application to remain open. There is some latitude where I can grant an extension of some of that time, which of course I will do. So, I can't quantify it right now, but we will need to address that because it is a substantial amount of hours and you need to be aware of, you know, how long you have if you need future time to address the requirement. It may be that you've already, again, what Dr. Byra has described, that maybe there's qualifying supervision that your supervisor will document for you. But if there's a balance of hours, you need to clearly know by what date must you have that documentation to the board office. Does that all make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So Marissa, you will get a letter from board staff, as Ms. Pakenung has pointed out. And I would just, just moving forward, since you're still not licensed, if you are currently practicing in Arizona, which from your application, it seems as though you are, please make sure that you are still practicing under an LBA until that license, hopefully gets approved. So I'm going to move on now.
I was going to say, Dr. Byron, should we move on now or should we just go ahead and make the motion to open the complaint against?
I was going to ask, what point in the agenda do we talk about? Do I have a motion regarding action to take open a complaint against David Kelton for practicing in the state of Arizona without a license?
So moved. Or second.
Okay. So Dr. Davey made the motion. Dr. Senhoff has seconded. Any discussion?
That motion is for this recommendation to the board to open a complaint.
Correct. Let's do the vote on this and then I have a follow-up question for board staff.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay. All in favor? Go ahead.
Sorry. I don't know if this needs to be added or we'll discuss it later, but I guess I'm also concerned that this form that was completed by David indicates that, yes, he did. He was a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Arizona for the entire time.
Yep.
He's going to have lots of questions.
Yep. He was also, I think, at the time certified for less than a year. So it looked like he also had a supervisor and that person's also not licensed in Arizona.
Yeah, that was my follow-up question around this. Okay. Do we want to do the vote on this one and then move to Melissa?
One thing at a time. Very good. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. The motion carries. Then the second question, the person listed on the application said to be supervising David is, I believe they are a BCBA, but also have a OT or SLP. If we're supervising as a BCBA. Yeah.
My question was, are they licensed in the state of Arizona?
Not as a BCBA, no.
Okay.
As a behavior analyst, rather.
So that supervision there is not the BACB requirement. Like that's essentially his work supervisor. Because I read that as he was under supervision because he was providing supervision as a BCBA, but that's not the case.
Well, that would be my interpretation because he had been certified for less than a year. So in order to do that, but if that person is not licensed, then that also is not okay. But again, I don't know if that person is then now also practicing in the state of Arizona without a license. So I don't know if we have to wait to make a motion to open a complaint against that person or I don't know the rules.
I guess we'll have to maybe find out when we interview Mr. Kelton.
Okay.
And help me remember, Dr. Byra, he was certified in 2023. Is he under that rule of having to have a supervisor if he supervises?
Well, he started the supervision. He listed it as 2023 that he started.
Yeah, he took the test. He took the test to be able to supervise on 10/2/2023. Shortly after he became certified by the BAC.
Okay. But if he, I'm just looking up his original certification date. Oh, yeah. No. Okay. So oh, no, that's his. Oh, that's his RBT one. Hold on. His original, if it was August 2023.
Yeah.
And he started supervision in December. He'd only have been certified for 4 months. So if you want to provide supervision without someone supervising you with those once a month check-ins, mm-hmm. you have to be certified for a whole year. So for that first until
and
August.
That was in effect on 8/8/23. That rule.
Right. Yeah. I think so. I'd have to double check that to be honest, actually.
Well, we can double check that before we.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
I've got his original cert date as August of 23. And then the supervision training was September of 23.
The supervision on
October 23. Yeah, sorry.
Right. I'm just trying to think of when the BACB enacted the mandate that you had to, if you were a supervisor within your first year of certification, that you need a supervisor for those monthly check-ins. I just can't remember the exact year off the top of my head.
Okay,
I know it's been recent. I just don't remember how recent. But in any event, you're still practicing without a license, and that's a problem. So.
Yeah, agreed.
All righty. Board staff, is that sufficient for a motion? Okay. Cool. All right. Moving on to 7A15, Olivia Myers. She is someone who's coming back. We submitted a fare to get additional hours. She did the intensive practicum through FIT, so she was short about 700 hours. And in the assets, like, we got some additional notes from her current place of employment with some supervision hours, but they didn't attest to the verification form. So and they put like NA across several of the boxes because they weren't doing like formal supervision. So I'm going to ask my committee members, you know, for some guidance here, because we're not getting that same level of,
yeah,
I guess, commitment that we would normally see. So for items 4, 6, and committee members, I am on page 4 of the file. And so for number 4, 5, 6, and 7, and maybe 8, they have a checkbox and not applicable, like, through that. They did provide a total number of hours, but the supervision components, they just put NA through a bunch of things.
Can I interject real quick? She added a statement that I guess clarified those NA answers. I don't know if you saw that attachment.
Let's see here.
Page 3, I think.
Oh, it's page 3.
Madam.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Scrolling in the wrong direction here. Yes. Yeah, so that the statement here, birth, death, am I allowed to read this? Committee members, do we know? Am I allowed to read the statement?
Yeah, let's see. It could be read.
Okay. Okay. So it says, this letter is to inform you Olivia Myers was employed as a BCBA with Affinity Autism Services from 10/17/22 to 3/31/24. During that time, she was employed as an independent BCBA, not requiring supervision as required by the BACB when the applicant is working towards their required experience hours set for the BAC exam. This is the reason why no for the answers question 7 or number 4 to 7, and again number 9. She did receive supervision, but not to the intensity as required when the applicant has not been board certified. So I guess with that statement, like, in addition, like, I'm struggling about the hours, if the supervision was not as we would have anticipated at the accrual level. But I don't know what we've done in the past with situations like this. So if other committee members have thoughts, I would love to hear them.
So I guess my question is more for the applicant. What was the nature of that supervision if it wasn't, if those are all NA, like, if it was not, I mean, I can see where you were designing, implementing, overseeing things, but why would you not have, why would those even be considered as NA, whether you were independent or not? I don't understand that, I guess.
I'm not looking at the actual checklist. I guess I could, but just to describe the nature, she was my direct supervisor and I was independent because I was post-certified, but we did meet weekly. And so she fully, mm-hmm. you know, oversaw my casework.
And she's completed this after the fact for us, as to show that you have additional hours?
Correct.
Okay.
Because
so you were already a BCBA licensed in the state of Utah. She's a direct supervisor verifying that she continued to give you additional
Correct.
Supervision as you continue to practice.
Gotcha. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So that makes a little more sense to me of why she would NA that that she was meeting with you at least every 2 weeks and to review that. I mean, she was obviously, I think that's the part maybe we're struggling with is she's reading it for supervised experience. Did the supervisor observe the applicant engaging behavioral activities at least twice a week? That probably could have been answered yes versus NA, correct?
Correct. She was trying to delineate that she wasn't providing me intensive practicum or, you know, under a practicum program versus I was already certified was what she had shared with me. But but yes, they probably could have been all answered yes. As far as the content and oversight of my work. In fact, I was also overseeing students at the time. So, and she, because in the state of Utah, you have to be licensed for 3 years. So she oversaw my oversight of students in their pursuit of licensure as well.
So if I'm following this, on your BCBA, you went through intensive practicum, or the intensive practicum process. Became a BCBA, got licensed in Utah. In Utah, you stayed under supervision for this person for an additional 800 plus hours to get to the 1500. And that is what you're bringing forward for us to review and approve on this application?
Yes, sir.
Dr. Meyer, do you have any other questions around that?
I mean, I guess I'm just looking for precedent of what we've had folks to fill out previously. It's not my understanding that we have like a formal document to lead that charge. And so if we don't, then, I mean, I don't want to deny someone an application because we don't have a standard template for someone to fill out.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question is, does this hit the spirit of our statute and rules that this individual's been under supervised practice for 1,500 hours? And I think it does. We don't have it. I mean, these come up rarely. I think the attestation could have been a little bit clearer to maybe make the statements that we've made here today. But I think the record reflects what happened. And maybe we just have board staff put a little memo that says this is, you know, what was discussed in terms of this application.
Then I'm in favor of moving this one along unless either committee members, any of the other ones do not.
I think we move it.
Okay. All right.
Just make the statement, Olivia, thank you for being here. Like that helps us wrap our head around some things because not everything's super clean all the time. So thank you for being here.
Sure. Thank you.
All right. On to 7A17. Sarah Scott. Is any chance, Sarah, Ms. Scott, you're on the call? Great. Yes, Sarah, real quick. Your last employment was listed in November of 2024. So are you currently working? And if so,
I'm still working at PBS.
Oh, okay. There was nothing listed past then. So and I guess at PBS, are you working in the state of Arizona currently?
Yes, I'm still as an RBT for Arizona.
Okay, so you're getting supervision in that capacity. Yeah. All right, thank you. Sorry to hold you up here. I just wanted to get some clarity when things aren't listed. Let's make sure folks haven't moved on to a different position. All right, so that being said, I see no reason not to move number 17, Sarah Scott, onto the board for approval. Number 18, Allie Morrell. This was another concern with the start and end of supervision and the licensure date. So let me just pull up my notes here. So she did have multiple supervisors, but Lauren Blair, and all the hours were done in Arizona. So for Lauren Blair, she was licensed October 6th of 2023, but we have a start date of supervision starting in August 7th of 2023. So 2 months prior to licensure. again, I don't know how many hours of that 898 were during that 2-month window. The applicant does have quite a few hours. She's over the 1500. She's over 2000. But I guess my bigger concern is, well, two concerns. One, like, there are some hours that were supervised by someone who was not licensed at the time. But then also that Lauren was providing services before she was fully licensed. So I don't know if Ms. Morrell is on the call or not, too, if you have a breakdown of those hours. Again, she does have more than she needs, but I don't know how we go about rectifying without a fare, the breakdown of those hours. I don't want to just assume that they will count, that enough of them was, past that time. So I think it would be my recommendation that we issue a fare to get that breakdown from Lauren and find out how many of those 898 were between August and October, those 2 months, and then hope that she just has enough after that to be able to have the 1500. I'd like to make a motion that we issue her a fare to get that sorted. Do I have a second?
Sorry, I don't think you don't need it. You just get to get it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So board staff for, this is again, number 18, Allie Morrell, if we could get a fare so we can have a breakdown of hours, by months, I guess, for her supervision under Lauren Blair. But then I think secondarily that we need to consider opening a complaint against Lauren Blair for practicing without a license, just like we did for David Kelton. Any discussion around that?
I was looking at the materials. I don't see. Oh, right there, 10/6/23. Yep, agreed.
The dates, right?
Yep. Okay. I was just double checking the dates on.
Oh, I appreciate it. They all run together when they're on multiple pages.
I think what might be important though before we open up a complaint is to get the applicant to verify those dates, right? Because if we go,
Well, it's on the supervision verification. Let me find it.
Yeah, you're right. I'm looking at it right now.
Right. So Lauren is the one who signed it at the bottom, right?
That's good enough. Yep. Then agreed.
Okay.
Madam Chair, we may also just want to address the issue that on that application or on that verification form.
Oh, yes. Lauren, number 11, right?
We indicated, number 11.
Yes. So for those of you who don't have it in front of you, so was the supervisor conducting the supervision or supervised work experience a relative, subordinate, or employee of the applicant? It does say yes. Again, it could be one of those autopilots where all the ones before it were yes and people didn't read carefully, but that would also be an issue for all of those hours if that was the case. So if we get some clarity from Allie Morrell on that one as part of her fair board staff, that would be really helpful. But then I do make a motion that we make a recommendation to the board that we open a complaint against Lauren Blair, unfortunately. Don't need a second? I do need a second?
You don't need a second. Oh, or maybe for the complaint, yes. Second.
Yeah, okay. okay, so I made a motion. Dr. Davey has seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. All right. Sorry, folks. On to my next. Let's see. Number 22 is my last one. My apologies again for the pronunciation. Yi San Peng. There's no current employment listed, but we did get the fingerprint clearance an email about the fingerprint clearance card, like the application being submitted. And that does appear to be from a work email for a company here in Arizona. So it's just difficult when folks aren't complete with their applications surrounding employment to know if someone is practicing in the state, if so, in what capacity, and if that is being supervised. So any chance that applicant number 22 is on the call and can clarify? That's unfortunate. So tell your friends, those of you who are left on the call, like tell your friends, come to the meetings. Because it's unfortunately not a practice that is in like multi-states. Like it's not like a Centrio or a card where they could be working at a non-Arizona location. The place of employment is only Arizona, according to their website. So I hate to hold this up, but I think we need to follow suit what we've done in the past and issue a fare for number 22 board staff to be able to find out if she is working in Arizona as her employee email address would indicate, if we can get clarification in what capacity and if she's working as a behavioral analyst, if she's getting supervised. Committee members, is that in alignment with what you were thinking?
Yeah.
Okay. So sorry, folks, like gives me no pleasure to have to do that. So please just make sure you're completing your application to the best of your ability. Come to the call so that you can answer questions. All right, that is my list. Sorry I had so many today with issues. But last but surely not least, Dr. Stenhoff, if you could finish us out with 23 to 26.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, I note Ms. Mal's hand
up.
But...
I see that. Ms. Mal, you got a code word for us?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair. And the next code word is Benedict. As in Pope Benedict, but it's Benedict. Thank you.
I'm even more confused now than I was before. All right, back over to you, Dr. Stein.
All right, thank you. So I had applications, Chloe Myers, Robin Preston, Chelsea Scully, and Talia Brigida. I would say those are all on my list of approving to recommend the board for approval. So my review of the files, including the applicant's education, supervised experience, examination, performance, and declarations, I find all of them to be administratively and substantively complete and recommend all applications to move forward to the board for approval.
Awesome. Do we need to do a motion for all the applications like that have been approved that we want to push to the board? Okay. Who wants to do that?
I've got it. I would like to move.
Right.
I'd like to move items 1 through 26 as discussed.
See what you did there. Do I have a second?
Second.
All right. Is the motion made by Dr. Davey? It was seconded by Dr. Stenhoff first. Any discussion? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Before we move on to the next agenda item, I just want to thank my committee members for helping me through those cases that were fortunately not on the clean list. So I still feel very new to this process and this role. So I just appreciate your support and help me navigate some sticky and challenging situations. It is most appreciated. Helps to have friends who have gray hair. Good stuff. All right. We already did agenda item number 8, so we are going to go to agenda item number 9, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding proposed legislation, including but not limited to HB 2027, HB 2061, HB 2173, HB 2276, HB 2351, HB 2441, HB 2451, HB 2632, HB 2707, SB 1037, SB 1125, SB 1235, SB 1243, SB 1372, SB 1447, SB 1527, and SB 1587. Ms. Paganon, take it away.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Anyone listening to you might come away with the impression that there's an awful lot of proposed legislation that would have some impact on this committee and the Board of Psychologist Examiners. Not necessarily the ability to regulate, but how they regulate and under, you know, what new responsibilities may come their way, maybe, you know, tasked with by virtue of legislation becoming enacted, what may restrict us from, you know, carrying out the duties that, you know, historically this board and the committee have done to protect the public. So anyone assuming those things would be absolutely correct. So every legislative session looks much like this. So 20 to 25 bills, it seems, is sort of that range that in recent years anyway that we've been tracking. I'm only going to talk about two of the bills on the list, though, unless anyone else wants me to comment on anything. I'm happy to. The list, as time progresses, includes more. I apply strikeout where, you know, those bills don't have don't stand a chance of passing, at least in the form in which they were introduced. They can always come back as those striker bills at any point in the future, referred to by anyone who's lobbying or working in and around the legislature. Sometimes those are called zombie bills for obvious reasons. So with every week, more of these bills just simply don't have a chance of moving forward for one reason or another. So the two bills that I want to talk about, I think I will first. Everyone wants to talk about House Bill 2027, of course, so I will refrain and I will discuss the other one, which is House Bill 2173. Is that on the, yeah, that's the bottom of page one of your report, so you don't have to scroll. That is the mental health inquiry prohibition. So the summary of the bill: licensing authority may not include any question on an application for a license, permit, certificate, or registration that requests information about whether the applicant has sought mental health assistance or received a mental health diagnosis or treatment. I wanted to single this bill out for some special discussion because the vote total suggests to me it stands a very strong chance of reaching, it has been already transmitted to the governor. So Governor Hobbs, the note which eluded me, transmitted to the governor on March 26th. So she has 10 days to sign, veto, or take no action, in which case, in the latter, then the bill becomes law. So this may be a new requirement. It's really predicated now entirely on the governor's decision. As you can see in your report, it easily passed the House. It ran into, it seems, a bit more resistance, though, in the Senate. Not quite as strong of a vote. Oh, wait, I have that backwards. I beg your pardon. It struggled through the House a bit, but strong support in the Senate. I had the chambers flipped. So no votes in the Arizona Senate. So there's a lot, this means that there's a lot of support behind the bill and certainly bipartisan support. So I'm not going to speculate what Governor Hobbs will do. She always supplies, in the case of a veto, she always supplies a written explanation of any veto decision. So I will be looking for that. I think that the committee and the board need to be sort of prepared for this outcome to be possible, that we need to take a critical look at the questions that we pose, both on the initial applications and the renewal applications, that really seek to inform the board whether someone could be a risk to the public. That's the whole purpose behind that question. I think there are ways of framing that kind of a question to enlighten the committee and the board without violating this provision if it is enacted. So I'll stop there in case anyone has questions or observations or thoughts about House Bill 2173. Okay, then the bill that I'm of course going to talk about is next is House Bill 2027. So forgive me for presenting to you, the committee, that this new life was sort of breathed into this bill, but in a very different way than the bill was drafted, essentially maintaining the spirit of the intent of the bill, while unfortunately still not acknowledging that this profession is deserving of pure self-regulation, right? So the amendment that was crafted very last minute in the House to get the bill out of the House was obviously a compromise such that the board delegated all of the regulatory responsibilities to this committee. From my perspective, from the administrative and operations an implementation perspective, I found that to be palatable, still regrettable by what the bill didn't, what the amendment didn't do. But essentially, all that was for naught. As the bill crossed over to the Senate, it just met the same outcome that it did a year ago, where it was refused reading and refused introduction, and therefore refused consideration. Not for lack of trying on the part of the group supporting the bill and lobbying for the bill. I know that to be the case. They made a valiant effort, I think, to try to achieve a different outcome this year versus what happened last year. And that didn't happen. So all this means, of course, is we maintain the status quo. So I'll stop there. And Dr. Davey undoubtedly has thoughts.
Well, I have thoughts. Just unfortunate. I mean, unfortunate that the work its way through the House only to be denied at the Senate level a reading for what appears to be a lack of the majority pushing it through over on the transmittal. Just again, thankful to the association for their efforts in trying to move this forward, as obviously they enjoyed the support of both the Board of Psychology and this committee.
And for what it is worth, Madam Chair, the proposed and adopted amendment compelled me to look at this, at solving this issue in a different way from a different perspective. And I wondered if there wasn't a non-legislative strategy to achieve essentially the same thing, which is for the board to delegate to the committee at least some regulatory responsibilities. But I can't find a way for the statute language to be construed in such a way to make that happen. Maybe somebody smarter than me can figure it out, but I can't.
That is unfortunate because as I see all the applicants coming to meetings, I know there's very long time frames between their application submittal and when we get to see them. And even if we agree today, like, still not done, right? It has to go still to the board. So even if we could circumvent that final step and just today decide, yes, you are licensed. I know it's only a week, but I feel like a week is a very long time when you've been waiting for us. So that's unfortunate. I am not the person to find a way to maneuver language, but would be nice if that was possible.
So unless anyone has any questions about any other bill on this list, that's really all I have. Essentially, I'm going to spend this week and next watching more bills die. So there will be fewer and fewer, as there always is, fewer and fewer to discuss. And even though I think this year there were exactly 25 bills, that it's such a tiny fraction ever reached the governor. So I don't know what that will be, but just because they're on this list, they're statistically unlikely to go very far. And we never know which ones. So just sort of something that we have to keep watching. We have to keep monitoring.
All right. Well, thank you, Ms. Pacadon, for those updates, sad as they may be. All right. We'll move on to agenda item number 10, new agenda items for future meetings. So do any members have any items that they wish to include on a future meeting agenda?
Dr. Barra, just based on kind of the conversation and something that we, you know, historically have seen more of is, you know, do we want to think about creating that form for those additional supervision hours to be submitted that looks slightly different? Because we do see that from time to time, like whether it's someone who's, you know, in this case, the Utah case is a little bit different, but someone who's, we might be dealing with a case where there's 2 months of someone that's not licensed and now they've got to go make up, you know, 150 hours somewhere. Do we want to create a form versus just having them put it in writing that may answer the kinds of questions proactively that we would have about that supervision and get an attestation on it from the supervisor? You know, maybe it's very similar to our verification form. So maybe we get a small group to kind of look at what that might look like and develop that for these cases.
Yeah, I love that. I think standardization, you know, brings us to a place of transparency. And so it's, well, how come this one looked different? And it was fine. Like, I just think anytime we can keep things as organized and standardized, the better. So I personally would love to see that. Yes, Ms. Pacadon.
So this is where I come in, of course, because I'm hearing a directive being formulated for staff. So I'm thinking of this in terms of a, maybe we call it a supplemental supervised experience verification form. And of course, staff will support the work of, you know, a small working group to develop it. I would suggest we couldn't have three members, and I think three members is too many. I think it would be ideal to have two members versus one member work with staff to achieve this. So I'm going to ask for, if we can find two volunteers, that would be my preference, because then we bring sort of, you know, a bit of a broader perspective with two than we might with one, even though you're all eminently qualified to do this. But I just think maybe two staff listening to two LBAs brainstorm would really help best inform the development of this tool.
I'm happy to help out. I'm sure.
I'll help as well if Dr. Stenhoff will have me.
It's probably the other way around, but
I'd be happy to contribute, and I'm hoping that I hope the applicants find it helpful too, right? Then they're not forced. The person who's sort of trying to verify the hours and forced to try and come up with their own devices, the applicant's not worried about, is this going to pass or not? I think that would hopefully reduce stress for both parties. And then I think reduce stress for us too, right? We all agreed that this is what it should look like. You either did it or you don't did it, or don't did it or did not do it. So I think it'd be nice to have clarity for everybody. Thank you, Dr. Davey, for the suggestion.
The other thing I had, Ms. Pacadon, it's not really an agenda item, but just, does Ms. Malice or board staff, do you guys all have the highest versions of Adobe? And the reason I ask is, you know, sometimes when the files are being made, as I'm scrolling through them, like I'll be looking at a document and then all of a sudden a fingerprint ID card is like 15 times the size of the screen and I have to scroll down to look at it and then I have to scroll back out. I'm just wondering if there's a way to kind of make sure that, so in quickness of being able to look through 25 applications, is there a way to make sure that those like everything's the same size? I don't know what the technical term is for that. Is there a way to like select all and make it all, you know, fit to one page kind of thing? And if, and I guess that's kind of to my question of like, are we using the most powerful version of Adobe to give your staff that ability?
Dr. Davey, I'll try to answer that. I can't speak to whether we probably don't have the highest level of Adobe available. So the product that we subscribe to is called Adobe Pro. I think that we just need to, whenever Ms. Malice finds a file that is, you know, that fits the description that you just mentioned, that we need to troubleshoot that together. I am not certain I would know how to do that. There are some workarounds. I'm not sure that I would know how to achieve the outcome that you're looking for necessarily in Adobe, but, you know, we could, if something's an image file, you know, save it to a smaller size before we PDF it. You know, there's some things that we can do there. I think maybe Ms. Malice just needs it's either benefit or torture from the two of us sort of working together to say, I'm not afraid, of course, to be, to approach this with, let's see what this, you know, trial and error, let me experiment with this. Oh, that didn't work, but oh, this is. So I hear what you're saying, that we really need to make sure that, you know, your substantive review experience, the process is as efficient as it can be for you. And if it means we need to do some file manipulation to achieve that, we'll make it happen.
Yeah, and I can mess around too to see if I can figure out a way to, like, you know, select all and figure out if I can make it all fit on my end as well. Now that people are taking more and more pictures, particularly like their fingerprint ID card and some other things, some of the files really struggle to, like, mm-hmm. to get through the packets.
Yeah, those are going to be the most the biggest offenders, of course.
And I'll just add to that, Dr. Davey, we are Adobe Power users, and part of the issue is that we receive files in many different formats. And so we do try to put it in one pretty PDF file, but oftentimes I know myself, I'm converting at least 10 different file types to just try to get it to Adobe, and it doesn't always cross over, right? Even when I try to manipulate the file. And so we'll certainly check with Z on that, but I will tell you that sometimes there's only so much manipulation we can do to even convert it to PDF. So that is one of the challenges that we have.
Yeah, understood. I mean, I think a good example was the one that we were looking at, the Ally Merrill file. I think as you scroll through that, it like jumped to different sizes, and you're just kind of following around. It just made it difficult to keep track of what was going on.
I'm wondering, I know Heidi, or sorry, Ms. Pakanon, I know we already have some actionable items for the software, but I wonder if we can put more of the beast of burden on the applicants, like when they're uploading a file, like have some size restrictions. I'm actually kind of surprised that the software like allows like massive like JPEGs and stuff to be uploaded, and with, you know, the prompt to say, hey, before you know, upload this photo, like print it as a PDF, because it will just, you know, make that file. Because also I think not even just the width of the screen, I think just the load time, because there's such like rich files, like it's taken a really long time to like open and stuff like that. And as I'm like, especially if we're on the call and I'm trying to like figure out which page it was, you know, on, like just trying to get it to load in a timely fashion. So I'm wondering if as we ask them for other changes, if we can put a cap, I don't know if I want it to be a hard stop, and maybe at least like a note for users. It'd be much better if you could make your file upload a PDF and not a JPEG or a PNG file, just for size, because it does make it hard.
Yes. I mean, we can try with advisories just to see how effective that is, that in every instance that an upload is required, we apply that advisory. Or we could even be very judicious where we know there to be instances where photographs are going to be liberally used and uploaded. the fingerprint card is just going to be the most obvious. But even the applicant's, you know, own photograph that they submit, right. I'm sure you see instances where the file size is just not that that's the most important document that you're looking at, but I'm sure you've seen instances where, you know, the highest, the biggest version, the largest version of that file was the one that the applicant uploaded, and we would try to discourage that.
It seems to be the photos that are the issue, right? I mean, if you look at that, the one that I've already identified, the alley one, jumping from like page 3 to 4, you know, it's like the upload of the verification form looks good on page 3 and then page 4, and then page 5 looks like it's a photo. All of a sudden it's like 10 times the size. So it may be like what format's allowed to be uploaded. Like maybe we have to get away from JPEG and everything needs to be PDF.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say that there would be a way to tell the software to say like only PDF files would be like allowable. You know, there might
be. I don't know if that solves the problem, right? I mean, again, if they're uploading them and they're like coming in as like gigantically off skew, like it may be something on the backside in the file that like when you run like text recognition or whatever, you may need to tell it that all the pages need to be formatted to fit whatever that standard is. So maybe we'll have to get some Adobe Power users to help us figure that out.
Perhaps, and I don't want to get out ahead of myself because this is what I'm about to describe. Jean's not here, so I'm going to get away with it. What I'm about to describe is the we anticipate that we're going to be asking this committee to test a new way of evaluating, performing substantive reviews of applications that do not consist of a folder crammed with PDF files. So because the system enables access to information now that it didn't when we launched, we see some potential there. But we are starting with the members of the psychology board's application review committee to test this out to see if it has the potential to be a better alternative. So this is going to be a multi-month sort of test process. We will keep you posted and let you know when we are ready to try it out on the CBA. And this process may reduce some of this experience that is awkward and, you know, just sort of impacts efficiency, you know, in a negative way. So I see some potential in a different strategy some months from now, 90 days from now, maybe.
Cool. In terms of the kind of revised template for supervision, do we need to make a motion to add that to the agenda, Ms. Pakanon? No? Okay. You're on mute, by the way.
Okay. Well, at least the committed the violation at the end of the meeting. No, I'll just take the direction from you.
Okay. Awesome. Any other items that need to be included? All right. Cool. Then everyone's favorite time of the meeting. Agenda item number 11 was an adjournment. So the time is now, it's noon. Since we're on the half hour, are we allowed to offer half credits? I mean, I know other ACE providers are allowed to do half credit CEUs. Ms. Malice, are we allowed to do like 3.5 hour credits for this meeting?
We may need to ask Dr. Rates as our ACE coordinator to issue the ruling on that one. I don't know that staff knows.
I think I'd have to look. I'm not sure that I know off the top of my head. I can take a peek.
Okay.
Or we can deliver the code word and then withhold awarding the credit until Dr. Officer Rates gets back to us with an answer, in which case then, you know, if it's not permitted, then we'll just truncate it to the nearest hour.
Okay, cool. I don't know. I figured if
Is it possible for those who submitted applications to ask questions, or should I wait until a later time?
Board staff will be contacting you about next steps. So unfortunately, no other questions at this time. But I will ask Ms. Malice to give us our code word in case we can use it.
Yes, Madam Chair. The next code word is Johnson. It's Johnson. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Malice. All right. So the time is now 12:01 p.m. and I exercise my prerogative as chair to adjourn this meeting. Thank you, everyone, and happy Monday.